Hey, we got a great TWIT planned out for you. Two All-in-Office here, Jeff Jarvis from Twig and David Prager. He's going to talk about what happened at Revision 3. We'll talk about the big outage in North Virginia that brought the whole internet down. And Google I.O. It's all coming up next on TWIT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWIT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new WinApp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for TWIT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWIT, This Week in Tech, episode 360, recorded July 1st, 2012, Impregnation. This Week in Tech is brought to you by GoToMyPC from Citrix. GoToMyPC connects you directly to your Office Mac or PC from any other computer or your iPad or iPhone. Sign up for a 30-day free trial at GoToMyPC.com. Use the promo code TWIT. And by Ford, featuring the MyFord Mobile smartphone app for electric vehicles. The MyFord Mobile app makes the electric driving experience fun and efficient. Learn more about Ford electric vehicle technologies at Ford.com/technology. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT7. And don't forget, they now offer free domain registration with annual plan subscriptions. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. Follow Audible on Twitter, user ID audible_com. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, where the show where we cover all the week's tech news. And boy, there was a lot of it this week. With some of the great minds, the pundits, the commentators, the great thinkers in the industry, starting with a guy who's a regular on This Week in Google, a professor of journalism at the City University of New York, the author of What Would Google Do? And a brand new book called Public Parts, Jeff Jarvis. It's good to have you. Welcome.
It's good to be here. I wore my Borg shirt in honor. Yes.
Does that mean you're in the Borg or you're – what's
– It actually means I went to Stockholm. But
why Stockholm?
Bjorn.
Bjorn.
Bjorn Borg.
Oh, that Bjorn.
Oh, yeah, I see what you did there.
A chain of stores there.
Oh, that's interesting. So he's original Borg, the tennis player. Mm-hmm. I get it.
He can probably pronounce the name of that volcano.
Well, that's, I was thinking Bjorn, the Icelandic singer.
That's
a different Bjorn.
Is that Bjork?
Yes, Bjork.
Bjork. Bjork.
All right. Boy, I always get the shows off to a rousing start. Should I show you my scars?
Certainly? No. Hey, we should
say. Let's all show our scars.
Recovering from an appendectomy a week ago. And your daughter's fine? She's good? The surgery went
well?
She's
doing well. She's doing well, yep.
That's good. So we welcome you back. You didn't get to be part of our coverage of Google I.O., but this is good because you'll give us...
I'm delighted to be here. I feel like I'm moving up from the kiddie table to the grown-up table at Thanksgiving.
It's the same table. I hate to tell you. There's no turkey, though. That's the only difference. Also here, hey, it's really great to have my old friend Prager. David Prager's here from... I don't know where you're from. You used to be from Revision 3. David...
I am officially unemployed.
He's the founder of Revision 3. Which was recently acquired by Discovery. And we're going to get into that in just a second. David was also an original TWIT.
I was, yeah.
On all the first few dozen shows. But then he had better things to do. But maybe you make it a more regular appearance.
Yeah, I'd love to,
I'd love to
Thanks
have you.
For having me back.
Yeah.
I was hoping to see you climb jungles and things like that on Discovery,
Yeah.
I'll be doing a couple projects at Revision 3. Just a couple.
Oh, good.
There might be a small opportunity for... something semi-similar to what Discovery type of programming is, which was my own idea before the acquisition happened. I'll tell you about that.
Oh, we'll find out in a second. That's interesting. And I want to say hi to Drew Olenoff, who is a good friend, longtime friend, that Drew on Twitter.
Indeed.
And Drew, for many years, was laboring in the vineyards of the public relations field.
No, I was community management.
Person.
No, community management's a little bit of everything.
I guess community management isn't exactly.
So now I'm a...
But now you're a journalist. I can have you on.
Indeed, yeah.
You're at the Next Web.
The Next Web, yeah.
And is there, and you've moved back out here, which is fantastic.
Indeed, yeah.
And what is your beat at the Next Web?
Pretty much everything. But awesome. No, I'm focusing in on Google, Facebook, Foursquare, social stuff.
I have for a long time really liked the Next Web.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's a great site. So it's good to have you there. It's good to have you here.
It's good to be here. This is my first time at the studio.
Yeah, you've never been up
Gorgeous.
Here. Yeah. You've been to the cottage.
I did. I was.
Well, thank you, Drew. And I should ask, as long as we're talking about health, I think people know that Drew was a very active, you got cancer, and you were very active in talking about it on the air and on the Twitter and really became an advocate. And you are, tell me about your health. You're in good shape.
November, 3 years clear of Hodgkin's lymphoma. So that's been good.
Isn't that awesome?
Mazel tov.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a long road, and I've started writing.
Did you do chemo?
Yeah, I did chemo.
Just chemo?
No, I had plenty of surgery. Mm. I didn't have to get radiation, luckily. And so I've been writing a book, but it's been changing like every year, because every stage after cancer has been weird. Like, I could write a book about going through it and then right afterwards and then 2 years later. So it still affects me.
But, and you had a very effective Twitter campaign, F Cancer. It was Blame Drew's Cancer. That's right. Yeah, Drew's Cancer. Mm-hmm. And people were going out on Twitter with that hashtag saying, I had a rotten day. Blame Drew's cancer. Indeed. It was a really great campaign.
Drew, that was, as I've had two cancers since this show. That was the greatest thing. It really, really, really was. It brought the right attitude to it, and people were able to rally around people and not get all mopey. And it was just really a perfect Twitter campaign against cancer.
Thanks, Jeff. You've been a huge inspiration with your stuff. I mean, you're a champ.
You know what's really interesting is that when all this kind of began, we were all young and healthy.
Right.
And then
I'm old.
Look at us now.
The people got sick, people died, people had children, mm-hmm. life started happening. And it's been very interesting to watch the social stuff, Twitter and Facebook and so forth, as that's been happening to this young San Francisco, hip San Francisco crowd, right. and watch them kind of grapple with it. And you know, Blame Drew's Cancer was a good example of that, where perhaps for a lot of us, it was the first time we knew somebody who had cancer. And so it was a chance to kind of explore that, and the fear and the terror and the, you know.
Well, I knew that I wanted to raise a bunch of money, and I just didn't know how to do it other than ask people for money, which doesn't really work for, you know, charities have a hard time doing that. So how was I going to do that?
Right.
But it was interesting.
How much money did you raise?
With Drew Carey involved, we raised $1.7 million for Livestrong.
Wow.
And for what benefit? What charity?
For Livestrong.
Livestrong.
Yeah. So... That was
funny. That's awesome.
That was pretty awesome.
That is a huge amount of money. That's fantastic.
How did Drew Carey get involved?
So I was sitting around with a couple of my friends in San Francisco, and I was like, okay, so I'm almost done treatment, so I should do something else, like just go out with a bang. So I had this Twitter username. I was Drew on Twitter, and I asked Ev Williams if I could auction it off. I know you can't sell usernames, but if I auctioned it off, he said, yeah, go for it. And I was like, Drew Barrymore doesn't use Twitter at all. Maybe Drew Carey. And I think it just got back to him. A friend told him about it, and he tweeted at me, and I was like in a Starbucks and like literally dropped my coffee when he replied.
I'll take it.
Yeah, and he's been super cool and super supportive ever since, and he's a really, really good guy.
It actually worked really well because you went from Drew to that Drew,
and he still hasn't used at Drew.
He hasn't?
No, it just kind of sits there, and I think he just likes to look at it. I mean, it meant a lot to him. He had personal, you know, friends and family battle cancer, so it was never about the username for him.
That's neat.
I'm not sure, even though I've explained to him, he won't lose followers or anything. He can just do the switch, whatever. But
now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I could take a little credit for that Drew. Was it not at South by Southwest?
When I was asking people what I should do.
You said, what should I do? And I said, well, you should be that Drew.
There you go.
Was that not me?
That's Leo Laporte, yeah.
Okay, I'm just checking.
Well, a lot of people.
Was that inspired by
that
girl?
Or that Kevin Smith.
It wasn't the first, was it?
No.
As opposed to the Drew or the real
that
Drew.
ThatDrew.com was available since, you know, you want to talk branding. But
there you go.
I don't know. It didn't matter.
Well, it's easy for you now with a username that's not as common as the name Drew to be able to search at replies. Like, right. I know people that have
much
singles.
Better.
Man. Like
you don't want to be Jack.
Chalik, I mean, he's got at T and he can't do at replies. And like even you know, for me, I could have changed mine to just Prager even, but I didn't want to. I just have it as DL Prager because if I look for Prager's semi-unique, but not really.
Right.
And I can find everything unique if I throw in my middle initial in there.
Brett Petersill at Brett, every time football season, thank goodness Brett Favre's retired, he would get ridiculous amounts of tweets saying,
you really
don't
want to be at Justin. That's the last thing you'd ever want to be in life. They're thinking. They'll get it. We should say hello to Jenny Jardin, by the way, who is
has
been on Twit many times. Is wonderful commentator on technology. Discovered a lump in her breast some months ago.
On Twitter, live, before the world.
And was very public about it, as you were, Drew. I think in ways you kind of led the way for that. She has since undergone treatment, and I think she's in good shape, but she's had radiation and chemo, and just recently surgery, she's promised that she will come on the show as soon as she's feeling
it. She went deep in the process that, like, nobody has ever had in a public
setting. That's Jenny,
A couple of days ago, she had a picture on Twitter of her tumor.
Right. Yeah, she got all of her own imaging and everything and all those files. And I think actually they gave her the wrong ones. And there was there's a whole story.
It's great.
That would be a good one.
We'll ask her when
she was on. She was in the midst of somebody else's bowels before it was discovered. Yeah.
Anyway, we wish you the best, Jenny, and get better. And I actually think she's really come through this beautifully. She's just amazing.
And changed so many lives. Like, there are so many people that are like, I went and got a test because you spoke up about it.
Well, I remember when she went in for the mammogram, she said, we found a lump. I'm going to go in for a mammogram, and I'm going to tweet this.
Well, she went in for a mammogram because her friend was just diagnosed.
Right. Oh, so that's right. It wasn't a lump. It wasn't a lump.
She just went in, like...
And she went in, it was kind of relaxed, but she tweeted it.
Yep.
She tweeted finding the cancer. It was very dramatic.
And she said before she was going to do it, and then by God, she held to it.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was amazing.
Okay, enough. Enough about cancer, darn it.
This week in cancer.
Yeah.
Jeez. Twick.
Well, it happens to us
many
all.
Many doctoral dissertations. But it's great to be able to raise money not only for education to find it quickly, but to raise money to, you know, make the treatments better and ultimately, you know, find cures for it as much as you can.
So Apple has done something I think is kind of reprehensible. I wouldn't mind talking about. Well, we got Google I.O. to talk about. and there's a lot. And you were there, Drew, right?
I was.
Did you go, David?
I didn't. Okay. I have a lot of friends that went.
Jeff couldn't. We were here covering it, but Jason Howell from All About Android went. So did Gina Trapani from This Week in Google. She Kevin helped Marks. Us with the coverage. Kevin Marks helped us. Kevin Marks was me. Did you know that? I gave him my driver's license and a badge. And he looks enough like me. I think he got away with it.
The accent is what
we got permission from Google. Don't worry, we didn't hoodwink anybody.
The record number of press there this year.
Yeah, you know why? They gave away a lot of crap. We'll talk about
Google
that.
Google I.O. is one of the hardest conferences to get into.
6,000 people. It took 24 minutes to sell out. I think that was the official time.
400 press.
But you know why? Because everybody who went got a swag bag that was pretty much unbelievable. Worth, it's hard to say, about $1,100. But then we spent it all. More than all on this, and I'm going to tell you what this is all about and why it's worth $1,500 in just a moment. But first, a little word from our friends at Citrix. If you need to, hey, vacation time's coming up. And if you're a business owner, if you need to kind of stay in touch with what's going on at work, if you want to just go home early or take an extra day off, maybe you'd like to telecommute, this is the solution for you. It's called Go to My PC from the folks at Citrix. You know, if you took one day off a week and didn't go into work but worked at home using Go to My PC, 20% less gas, 100% less wear and tear on your brain, I think this is just a great solution. And it sure is fast, easy, and most importantly, very secure for Mac or PC. You can work on any program. You can send and receive email, access any file on the network, anywhere, even on the go, even on your iPad or iPhone. And that is a wild thing to be working on a Windows PC from an iPhone. Just as if with the Retina display, the desktop is actually right there. It's pretty amazing. It's a real lifesaver. If you're away from the office, if you're planning a vacation, actually, this would be a good time to do it. 30-day free trial. Before you go on vacation, visit gotomypc.com. Click that try it free button. You do this on the computer you want to access. And then use the promo code TWIT just to let them know that you heard about it here. You don't have to get email if you don't want to. You don't have to, try it for 30 days. As you're traveling around, as you're on vacation, no matter where you are, if you can get online, even on an insecure Wi-Fi hotspot, it uses HTTPS, 128-bit SSL, so it's completely secure. It's like a VPN back to the office. In fact, here's a tip. Here's a pro tip. If you are in a kind of sketch place, use Go to My PC, log in to Go to My PC, and then surf from your office computer. You'll be completely secure, completely safe. Same thing with the email. It's like a VPN. And it's free for 30 days. Visit gotomypc.com. Use the offer code TWIT. And we thank Citrix for their support. So, swag. You've got some of it. This is the Nexus 7 phone. Actually, wait a minute. The Nexus phone was the first thing they gave you. Yeah. That's kind of not such a great thing because it's old. It's a whole 6 months old.
And isn't this the one that you can't buy anymore? Like,
oh, yeah, that. Yeah. We'll have to talk about that in a second.
I've got one. It's a nice phone.
It's a good phone. You know what? After they gave it away, I revitalized my old one.
Yeah.
Jelly Bean.
Jelly Bean is nice.
With butter.
Is Jelly Bean on the Nexus phone?
Yeah. It comes with Jelly Bean.
Yeah, and on the 7.
You won't get the upgrade for a while if you've got it from a carrier, because, you know, the carriers are kind of...
Oy.
Hold on. Oy. Hold on. You don't need a new operating system. But is Jelly Bean nicer, Drew?
It's nice. See, but I didn't get to use Ice Cream Sandwich all that much because... Right. Of the carriers, I've jumped a version. So some people that have gone in depth with Ice Cream Sandwich say there's some nice tweaks there, speed stuff.
How many of you in the audience were here for Google I/O? Is that a goodly number? No, just 3, 4. What do you think? You feel like Jelly Bean is faster? Can you tell? Yes, you can see the difference. All right.
Yeah.
So Drew, what are your favorite features from a user perspective of Jelly Bean?
Google Now is unbelievable.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Google Now.
Okay.
So
love that face.
So at the keynote.
Right.
So tell me what Google Now is.
So Google Now is just pulling all of your information together and trying to make suggestions to you and make it an easier springboard to do things.
So like, is it search? Like, you use it as a search tool? Or
It's a hybrid search tool. And
it's alerts,
let me just bring it up.
So it's a program that you run, or no?
It's constantly running.
Okay.
So
let's look at it here. This is Drew's Nexus 7. So it's got a pretty interface. It says what you're doing, which is kind of interesting. So it's showing.
So if I've looked for directions,
your calendar,
it'll bring it up. I can set a place as a home.
It's got your score for the Cubbies Giants or Reds Giants. Right.
You can say Google.
Now, how did it know to put that there?
Location data. And just data about me because everything's tied to my Google account.
This is where...
So it knows you're like a Cubs fan, so it's going to pop up the Cubs score.
Well, in this case, Giants, yeah.
But Giants Cubs. I'm sorry, Giants
so
Cubs.
So it puts the...
No, I'm actually a Phillies fan. Okay. So it's location-based.
Well, this is what they said. And this is where I thought there was a little bit of a tin ear at the Google I.O. conference. They're saying, hey, Google Now, it's great. It knows, based on your previous searches, it knows what to put up in here.
If you have that feature turned on.
But isn't that kind of creepy? Doesn't that sound...
Well, now we're going to go to the creepy
word. Let's go creepy. It's okay.
No, but Jeff, see... Okay, you defend this.
I'll defend this because you're opting into it and it has value. When I met with the Google people in Munich who handle privacy stuff in the front line of privacy, they get all kinds of crap about Street View. They got none, zero, no complaint about Google Priority Inbox. Why? Because it gives you value back. Right. So I saw somebody's blog post this week that said that Google Now had said, hello, you have an appointment this far in advance, and with traffic the way it is right now, you better leave right now. Mm-hmm. That's real value.
Yeah, but it's kind of creepy.
Put it up. Oh, no. Define creepy.
Okay, I agree. I understand, and I agree with you that you're opting in. This is something you want. What I'm really saying is Google needs to be thinking a little harder about how it states this stuff because it sounded creepy.
Right, and they've got to be very clear why it does it and how it does it and give you options at every position so that you can choose to or not. But the value potentially is so great that it's really the extreme of where we're headed. And take away the idea, you know, I think mobile is an overused word, and it's not about mobile, it's about knowing you. Mm. And if the device and the cloud and the service know you and can deliver you value on that basis, that's the promised land.
Well, and I... I said it was creepy, but I looked at it. I thought, oh, that's neat. And I'm looking to see if I can put it on my Galaxy S3, and I can't because you have to have ice. Right. You have to have Jelly Bean.
Yeah.
So it's creepy, but I want it.
Right. Exactly.
Well, I think there's privacy policies in place. I mean, if you're keeping... I mean, I saw you had a to-do list. It was your Google calendar.
Yeah.
Now, like, they have a privacy policy that they don't look at that. They can't look at that. It's encrypted. If the biggest subpoena in the planet ever happened, they can get in there. But in general, like, anything you're keeping on Google Documents is private and secure. And even if there's ads that come up to the side of, in your Gmail... That's all algorithmic basis. There's no people involved with it. So in a way, like, I don't know. I kind of like, as creepy as, you know, bigger companies get, quite frankly, and you have all the conspiracy theories you want, I'm going to kind of trust that my privacy is pretty decent at Google. Right. And I think my privacy is a ton better at all Google than it is at Facebook.
Let me try some samples and see if you would find how far. So what if, and I love this came from the Mex guy in our chat room.
Okay.
What if it said, oh,
here we go.
You're 48. I'm going to make an appointment for a colonoscopy for you. Would that be creepy?
It could save your bloody life.
No, right. I mean, Google eats data for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Make an That's appointment. What if do? It said, hey, you ought to get an appointment? That would be kind of creepy.
Listen, I wrote a post about my colonoscopy. See, I have so many different diseases. My appendectomy that I should have trusted Dr. Google. I woke up last Sunday at 11 in the morning. I had a new pain. I went online. I said, bleh! And I'm a hypochondriac, so I've had appendectomy on my left side lots of times.
Right.
So it's on the right side. It's on the right spot. I should have gone to the hospital right then. I didn't. I waited until I was there at 7:30 that night, and as a result, it burst. Now, if Google had said, and had a feedback loop, and said, well, tell us why you're looking for this.
Wow.
Gee, did you say ouch when that happened? Hey, asshole, you should get to the hospital. Now, mind you, I called the hospital. I said, you know, I got a pain in my left side. And the woman said, I swear, yeah, what do you want me to do about it?
Oh, that's healthcare in America.
That's bedside manner right there.
So I will take, and so people said, when I wrote about this post, people said, yeah, Google knows more about me than my doctor does. I have more trust in Google than I do in my doctor. Now, and Google didn't feed back all kinds of grapefruit diets or, you know, Don, I must take peppers for your cancer diet.
Sure.
It fed back WebMD and Wikipedia, which is okay, and NIH and Mayo. And it gave me information that I was the idiot who didn't go in soon enough.
Right.
If Google Health had really happened and had known why I was searching, why are you searching for this, Mr. Jarvis? You know, let's talk about this, Jeff.
So I would agree, as long as it's opt-in and you're explicitly choosing to participate in this system.
Right.
Now, here's a case where there wasn't an opt-in. Facebook recently changed everybody's email to @facebook.com.
Yeah, which...
opt-in for that.
Which they kind of warned that they were doing in April.
They did what they always do, and I'll almost say that if I was Facebook, I would have done it the same way. So what they do is that they roll out a feature, whether it's a privacy-related thing or whether it's some part of your profile. Mm-hmm. They want everyone to use it, so they auto-opt people in. Mm-hmm. The majority of the people keep it. They apologize. They probably plan the apology. They said, hey, we're really, really sorry. As a result, the more people are going to be using @Facebook for their email, and they would have never been able to have that kind of adoption. It's a really crappy way to do it. But I'm pretty sure that they opt everyone in and apologize later. It's kind of like, you know, ask for permission or apologize later. And they got more of what they wanted. And I bet you they have no regrets.
Right. And a lot of people's reaction was, oh, my God, this is crazy. How could they do this? And then you see they planted the seed months ago that they were doing this. I'm not saying it was a right or wrong maneuver, but like you said, I mean, when you have that many users and you're going to – that's how Facebook does
it. But you see the complaint. Do it. Because, for instance, on my iPhone and Android phone, I have my contact list syncing with Facebook. So everybody got their email replaced by @Facebook.com. Now, that's my fault because I did that, but
– But you relied on Facebook to act as your directory to your friends.
My mistake.
Now it is a less effective directory.
I didn't realize when you rejoined Facebook, you joined in that hard.
Oh, I joined in big. I jumped in. Yeah. Well, and you know, and I was looking a guy. I don't know his full name. Elliot. He sent me a tweet saying, "Hey, I'm quitting Facebook because of this. Because I think this is finally going over the edge to photographer. I can't quit Facebook because I realized once I quit it the first time, this is where the stories are. I got it. My job requires it. Now, if I were a private citizen, would I do it? I might not. On the other hand, I get huge benefit out of Facebook. Don't we all stay in touch with friends?
Yeah, I mean, Facebook is literally what the Yellow Pages should have done. If the Yellow Pages gotten their business together, gone online and did things, Facebook's an absolute utility that is this day and age's Yellow Pages or the personal contact, the contact book. Everything's stored there and it's social. But, you know... Whether people use it a lot or don't use it a lot, there's some creepy stuff going on there,
too. Look at my screen here. This is my new email address, and I actually did what Lifehacker had an article on how to turn this around. I did it, and it still says my email
Right.
It's leogLaporte@facebook.com. Now, if you send me something at that address, I don't even know where it goes. Right.
90% of my...
That's the issue. It's people were... I saw one case of somebody who used it for business emails, had sent emails to somebody, and they went neither. Nobody knew where they were. And as always, it's about surprise. Surprise is stupid.
It says it goes to Facebook messages, apparently.
Well, some people say they haven't gotten any of these messages. There.
Well, and the thing to remember about Facebook messages is it has its own spam filter, which I don't really trust Facebook with spam. I trust Google and Gmail because they've been doing it since they launched, 8-9 years ago with email. Now, Facebook is new to email and messages. But if you check that spam area, you'll find messages. You'll be very shocked that it got there. And there's no reason why.
There's no spam filtering.
Well, there is, but they kind of hide where the spam goes. And there's no filtering or controls on why it went there.
That's weird, Leo. I'm looking at your page right now. I think we're friends, but it won't show me even that email.
I bet you it's because he has his privacy settings to not display email to his friends.
Well, no, wait a minute. What it said was...
I was just going to do a test and send you an email.
I have this set only me... Only me, and then this should be public. And this is friends. So you should see it.
So you've already done too much thinking. That's way too much for any user.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you should see it. I don't know why you don't see it. It's supposed to be there. It's set to friends. All right. Okay. That's two. Here's one more. I'll let Robert Scoble describe it to you.
Oh, boy.
In fact, they got... spammy on my freaking calendar and started pushing hundreds of on my calendar. I am so pissed
over
off.
The freaky line with Scoble.
It's worse than the freaky line.
Kevin, the events things.
The events things spammed the shit out of my calendar. Who the thought that they had access to my calendar to put my shit on my calendar? That's my calendar. Don't touch it. They put hundreds and hundreds of events that people put on my calendar automatically without my approval, without my approval, without my clicking on it.
Straight
into
the calendar? Oh.
Straight on the calendar.
That is, of course, from the Gilmore Gang.
You know what's going on
Thank you,
here?
Steve, for letting us play that clip. We actually didn't ask, but I think you don't mind.
Chad, a brilliant job of bleeping. And can we ask, please, someone in your audience to do an auto-tune remix of that?
I think there are remixes, and I think it's just begun. This was a couple of days ago on the Gilmore Gang. Now, what he's talking about is a new feature Google also announced at Google I.O. called Events, which is essentially Evite or Eventbrite or an invitation system on Google+. It's nothing spectacular. It's nice.
Oh,
it's pretty.
They have one cool feature, which is when you have an event in Google+, you can make it a quote-unquote party, I think they call it.
Party mode.
People that are at an event, they can start putting photos in on it.
Right. And what this solved is, you know, at my wedding, I had always thought about doing photos. Everybody take photos with digital cameras or whatever, and then it be tossed into one feed. And it's like, how do you do that? Through Flickr with tags or something like that. But yeah, it's literally like every photo you take while you're in party mode goes to the stream, and it sorts it out by photographers and most popular. It's really good.
Well, kind of.
All right.
It is color-esque.
and it's pretty. They have really nice template. I mean, I think they did a nice job.
Right.
If you just look at mine, you could see that I have a few invitations, as did
just
Robert.
Just a few.
Just Robert. As they started pouring in the minute Google announced this, and I have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of invitations. Many of them have now expired. Now, fortunately... I had already found this. I think it's frankly a mistake in Google Calendar. The default in Google Calendar is when somebody invites you to something, just add it to the calendar, whether you accept or not.
Right.
Go into your calendar settings and change that so it only gets added to your calendar when you accept. That's a norm. That's how it should be set. Now, apparently, Robert has it set the same way.
Right.
I used to get, because my Gmail account is just my last name at Gmail, Laporte at Gmail. It's apparently a lot of French people or something named Laporte. I don't know. Because I get invitations to a lot of French parties, to dentists' events, all sorts of crap. And so I had to turn that off. Right. And that happened months ago. So I understand what happened to Robert, but it really is his settings, right?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, we'll probably talk about it later, what Google's actually doing with Google+, and it's making all of their products more social, like, it's infusing. So, it is still very new, and it's probably, I mean,
Vic
Kundotra,
in one of the interviews at Google I.O. said, it's not Google+, it's not even a social.
It's not a social network.
It's Google. He said, this is what Google is from now on.
This is the
they didn't say that for a year.
What the hell does that mean?
And go back to Google now. This is where it comes full circle, right? Google, and I've said it again and again and again, but I say it on Twig, is that Google is looking for signals about you. Facebook is looking for signals about you, who you are, where you are, what you want to do, what you know, what you don't know. Mm-hmm. And when it has those signals, it can deliver back hyper-personal services to you. And that's what's happening right now.
Yeah, I mean, they've been saying this for a year since it launched. And when I sat down with Vic and Bradley, they said the same thing. You know, it's a social layer. It's a transformation the company's gone through within the past year in the way they do business with everything, the way they're handling their developers, and YouTube's becoming way more social, which is smart on their part. And they're not freaking out about user base or numbers. Google has a lot of users. And they're also not freaking out about how long people spend in the stream. It's like 12 minutes now, and they're like, we're fine with that. That's cool. Yeah,
that's not very long compared to, say, Facebook, where people might spend an hour or two.
If you're a Google Plus user, which they're saying they're working on making all their users Google Plus users, they're always using Google Plus then, whether doing a search. Now, they have social search, which everyone freaked out about. Oh, my gosh, this social search, that's an invasion, which you can turn off.
I liked Google Plus initially. I liked Buzz initially. I want it to be something great. I just don't, it's not so compelling to me.
Right.
But I guess it doesn't matter. You're saying they don't care if I spend any time at Google Plus.
No, because technically, if you're using a Google product and you're logged in and you have a Google Plus account, you're always using Google Plus.
Yeah.
Right? It's not a social network. Just because you go to plus.google.com,
that's not that important.
That's just a page,
yeah.
Right? That's just
Drew, that's a really good point. Same as if you never go to google.com, you're using Google search all over creation.
If you're using it in Chrome or through Firefox.
One of the things that I know Gina Trapani was hoping for, many developers were hoping for, was an API, a right API to Google+. And they did an interesting thing. They did actually create a right API, but it's a little weird. It's called history.
Yeah.
And it lets third parties, like let's say Foursquare, pump your previous Foursquare check-ins into your Google Plus. In effect, they created a timeline. Nobody knows this, but Google now has timeline.
Right.
History, right?
History.
Mm-hmm.
But the key difference here is that it puts control in the hand of the user so that it feeds this stuff into Google Plus for me to have. I can then choose what to share
on. I like that.
Right.
And so as I forget which story was, it's in the rundown. They added friction back to frictionless sharing.
Right.
Thank you.
So the friction is, which is great, right? The friction says that I get to decide whether I want to take these things that are conveniently there for me now, very easy for me now, and choose to share them specifically. And I like that.
You're probably talking about Mike Elgin's article in which
Thank you.
Yeah. He says, and I'm waiting for somebody to do this, but I like the idea, and you're absolutely right. If it's not automatically public, and this is why Facebook and Google are very different. Facebook's default is always kind of public, right? Or it used to be always private. And it's flipped at some point.
No, that's not really true either.
All right. Well, if you turn on sharing on Spotify, everybody sees what I'm listening to, true. And I'm kind of embarrassed lately.
Right. It's public to an audience, which are your friends.
Right. Or if you turn on subscriptions,
then you're getting
anybody
public,
who
public.
Freaking wants it.
Well, you can be as transparent as you want with your with all of your history in Google, and they'll allow you to delete it. They'll say that they'll delete anything you want.
I like the dashboard.
I turned on this is about as creepy as it gets. I had Google Attitude on my phone, and I decided to just leave it on.
I did
and,
too.
And I know, but I also decided to let Google record the history of it, knowing
that
I could
cool?
delete it. But it's neat because after a month long period of time, I saw everywhere I went at every time of the day, and I happen to not be creeped out by it. And I know that if I am creeped out by it, I can turn it off and I can delete the history.
And
of
it's
it.
Not public.
And if I'm doing anything illegal, I'll pause it for a while and then turn back on.
This is the exact reason why I use Foursquare. I don't use Foursquare to get mayorships and badges and all that stuff. I literally love going back and seeing where I was 2 years ago. Like, I'm using TimeHop. Like, I get the emails of, like, what
I
you
like
did
TimeHop.
Last year.
Isn't that
time.
Fun?
That's freaking awesome.
I check in on Foursquare instead of using Path to check me in on Foursquare because I like to have Foursquare say, you haven't been here in this much time.
Right, yeah. Right.
And I like seeing that screen. But I learned that you can go back, open Foursquare, and you can click on your check-in, and it'll give you that same information.
Okay, anyway. Cool.
So this is the Latitude history. This shows all the check-ins. It shows them on a map, goes back months.
Right.
You can do your location history.
You just shared that with everyone.
Later. I know. I don't care. I'm like you. I'm, you know. Look at this. This shows all the. This is,
that's pretty fun.
You can play it.
Back and forth from your house.
You
to
can
the
play
studio,
it. Yeah, basically, my life is very dull because back and
to
forth,
your bedroom,
back and forth, back and forth. But I think this is very interesting.
Right, it's data.
That's one day. Let's show it larger. Let's show 30 days.
So now knowing, you know, now Google can tell you, not only does it think you should have a certain type of medical checkup, it'll tell you where to have it at because it knows where
you
are.
Yes, it knows where you go. It's very cool stuff. It's actually following you all the time. In fact, I was kind of sad. I got a new phone and I forgot to turn. You have to turn this on.
Yeah.
I got a new phone. I didn't turn it on. So I have a whole gap, a month gap. Oh, my gosh.
It's like you didn't go anywhere.
I didn't go anywhere.
You just sat in that chair.
You slug you.
So Mike says he thinks of Google Plus history as an expansion of instant uploads. Instant uploads is that thing where you take a picture.
Right.
All the pictures are automatically uploaded to Google Plus, not visible. They're private.
They sit. Yeah.
Oh, right.
And then if you want to make it available, you look at it.
It's kind of like an iCloud kind of thing, or just, you know, this.
Does it not require a huge trust of Google, though?
But Google, if Google violates that trust, Google is screwed as a business.
Right.
They know.
Right.
Well, all these companies want to be the one that hosts all of your data and information. That's what they want at the end of the day, right? And the worst thing they could possibly do is do something wrong with it, because if everybody jets, then they lose. So I've got to, I've been using Gmail for years and years and years. I'm not going to move to another email address. That would be horrific.
Right.
And Google knows that.
So this is an API. And I think this is actually done right. This is what this was. Because what you don't want is about 800 Google Plus apps, which is what an API, in effect, that's what people were hoping
for. They've watched what Twitter did.
Well, look what Twitter's doing, and we're going to talk about that in a bit. They're pulling back. In fact, some people are saying Twitter's breaking the contract that they had.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. I also want to talk about this phone, because you can't – it's now banned. You have a banned phone.
Banned in the U.S.
Banned in the USA.
Temporarily banned.
I'm not too thrilled about that. And we are going to talk. Yeah, and we're going to talk a little bit about the swag bag from Google I/O, including the Nexus Q.
Jealous.
I'd like you. We got you a pass, Jeff. You just didn't come.
I know.
I should explain what this is.
He has more important things to do.
I teased. Yeah, he had an appetite.
If I had gone, I'd be in some hospital in San Francisco still. So
I am so glad that we have this. This is a beautiful box. This is a glass brick. Isn't that beautiful? With a number etched in it, 737, Google, and then a little – here, I'll show you a close-up here, a little check button. You know, it's probably easier to see in the other place there. Oh, look, you can zoom in. You are a true professional, Chad Johnson.
That's impressive.
Ooh, look at that.
Right there.
Look at that. Isn't that beautiful?
It's got this nice wood color to it. It's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. Look. It looks like an exclamation mark.
Isn't that just the crystal knickknacks that they sell with
laser
something inside.
Yeah. You know how much that cost? 1,500 smackers.
So who dropped the $1,500 for it?
Me.
You did.
I asked Jason, well, next year sometime. It'll be a prototype. Of course, it's Google Glass. And this is the number. That's your order number. Out of 6,000, pretty good work from Jason. He ran right up to the front.
I didn't think that the stunt that they pulled off was very good. I thought that the stunt was amazing, but I thought it wasn't representative of Google Glass.
Right.
Oh, well, all we know from the stunt is it takes pictures.
But, I mean, the stunt was amazing. It was cool. It was fun to watch.
Let's describe it. So Vic Gundotra is talking about Google Plus on day one of the Google I.O. keynote, and all of a sudden, he's like Kanye West comes in. It's Sergey Brin. Wait a minute. And he interrupts. He says, we got something going on.
Mm-hmm.
And Vic is like, okay, well, I knew this was going to happen, but okay, go ahead.
He played well.
It was kind of neat. He said later he got Taylor Swifted.
Yeah.
Well, they had a small window, and I think he was ready to interrupt at any time whenever that window of opportunity opened.
So they had a Zeppelin, and by the way, I was informed it was a Zeppelin, not a blimp.
Okay.
They had a Zeppelin.
The difference is
it's got a rigid side, right?
Very good. You've been talking to Roger Chang.
No, it's because I got to ride on that Sanyo light.
Right.
Ship. Didn't you do that as well?
No, I was invited. I didn't get the chance to do it.
Old Tech TV sponsor.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And that was a blimp or a dirigible.
They called it a light ship, but I think that was maybe a branding thing by the people who flew.
So this was a dirigible.
We can do moments about any topic on this.
Pretty much.
This was a Zeppelin. It has a rigid skeleton as opposed to just a balloon, I guess. And so they had some divers up there wearing the Google glasses,
like base jumpers in the
right. They were wearing squirrel suits.
Yeah.
And they also had a pouch with a pair of Google glasses. That was, I don't know if that was clear, but the idea was this is going to be a relay race where they would hand the,
yeah,
like
they
the
had
Olympic
to deliver
torch.
Them. Right.
So they had the pouch. So the guys there, and we can see in a Google Hangout, five jumpers.
That was
we
pretty
can see
wicked.
Their view. It was mm-hmm. amazing. If you haven't seen it, go see it. They jump out of the Zeppelin, and you're seeing the way all the way down. Now, as it turns out, we found out the next day that the way that they get internet access is they had 3-foot dishes with laser sights on them, and there's people on the roof aiming it at mm-hmm. these people as they go down. It's the only way they could.
And they also had some broadband backpacks or something like that, right?
Yeah, well, I think it was this okay. microwave connection. So they're coming down. They land perfectly on the roof. Could have been really a disaster, but it wasn't. It was a beautiful day. There was no wind.
These were definitely trained professionals.
I guess they
probably
went
out and found the best base jumpers, and they asked the best ones who would be willing to participate in the stunt, and probably several, most right. of them probably said yes.
Right. I mean, they had to get special permission from the FAA. And,
I'm amazed they were able to get permissions. This must have cost them
it's
a
Google.
Lot.
It's Google. Of course
Google.
You can. They probably sure. spent a ton
and you
of
know,
money on it.
The city was right to do it because the city looked gorgeous. Oh, it was yeah. really a great thing for San Francisco. Because they jump, they land on the roof, they hand off the pouch to some guys on a bicycle who mm-hmm. also are wearing glass. So now we see their perspective. They go up and off a ramp and do loop-de-loops, and they land on the roof of the next building over, and mm-hmm. then they hand off the pouch to two guys in mountaineering outfits. They rappel down the side of the building. One guy goes too far. Sergey says, stop, 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 we're on the third floor. The guy went all the way mm-hmm. to the ground. But fortunately, the guy with the pouch stops on the third floor. He goes in, and he hands it off to some more bicyclists who tear through the lobby. Was anyone in the lobby when they did that? That looked like they were going to kill somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, they're surprised onlookers. It was great.
Diving out of the way. They go up into the conference hall, into this keynote, and right up onto the stage, and they give the glasses to Sergey, and they don't work. But that was kind of funny. But they, right. but the point was, this all was shot with Google Glass. But you're right. We learned it was really a lot of noise about nothing.
They showed off
a webcam.
Amazing webcam that you could, and then that you could, I mean, the connectivity they were getting, like you said, was just because there had people outside shooting up some kind right. of a beam to them. But they showed off a really cool webcam and what you could do streaming it, and that maybe it won't fall off your face while you're free falling.
It was a webcam.
And I think Google Glass is cool, but I mean, it's cool because I think it has the potential to be a really neat heads up right. display and a really neat kind of a wearable computer. Yeah.
Right, David, that's the key to it, is that it's going to give you data back. We've yet seen no demonstration of that other than a canned one.
They brought people, Joshua Topolsky, one of them from The Verge, into a room and said, here, you can put the glasses on there. It's locked to a fireworks display.
Yeah, yeah.
The only person who has seen Google Glass work is Gavin Newsom, our right. lieutenant governor.
Right. Well, I'm supposed to go up to Mountain View soon to check them out. So
are you?
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see.
Okay,
yeah.
Please let us know. I want to know, because what is it? Is it Android? What is it? We don't even know.
I mean, I think, you know, I wrote a piece about it the other day, and I was just like, you know, because everybody's caught up in the wow of the plane. And mm-hmm. I think when you get past that, you can think about it. This would be a great teaching tool for surgeons and doctors, you know, seeing their perspective. Of course it's going to
work. Is it
going
to have voice control?
Right.
Is it going to have, do you have to have a phone in your pocket? We don't know anything about it.
Right. But so they've, so if you could
so
follow,
that's why I spent $1,500.
You can follow Project Glass on Google Plus actually. Right. And they're doing a Glass sessions where they're showing video of what you can do. I mean, hopefully it's open to developers and very hackable.
I'm sure it will.
It's interesting. I mean, I don't think it's like, this is the future of the world and this is the future of Google. I think it's yet again, it's like, here's something you could do to get data, capture data that Google can display in cool, interesting ways.
I think it was a clever way to distract from the fact that there isn't really anything to show yet.
That's
everybody a paid attention to the jumpers and all this stuff.
I think what they've done is they've built the glasses.
It wasn't a demo.
It wasn't a demo.
That's the point. It takes pictures.
I think it'll take pictures. It's got the lens on it. I also think that you'll be able to, you know, I think it'll know where you are in time and space and be able to look around and have a technology that does heads-up display type of stuff. Theoretically, and it sounds dorky and nerdy for the early adopters, but, you know, you have the glasses on, you're standing in the middle of the street, it'll tell you that's the name of that restaurant, that's the name of that one.
Right. And that's the video that they put out originally with it.
Well, it'll get
all this, like, Terminator stuff.
It's going to barely work, and it's going to be super nerdy for early adopters, and it's not going to be functional for your life. But down the road, it'll get there, I think.
But it's the key to this is that I think this is this versus Siri. This is eliminating the device from the interaction. It takes the last mediator out between you and the world. so that you can have a voice command or, you know, a simple command to the glasses to say, tell me what that is and tell me what the special is today, mm-hmm. and whatever. And it feeds back to you in a way that doesn't require you to be looking down into a phone.
Right. And I think I have high hopes for it. But we don't. I mean, we've seen enough 3D.
Well, the folks that were walking around with the units, they were tethered to a phone that were walking around the
why haven't they shown anybody?
A lot of...
Maybe the question is, why did they decide to announce this to the world now when it's not quite right? Maybe they were just so excited about it, like, we got to give a teaser.
Yeah, I thought when they put that original video out with all the, like, you know, here's something, it seemed like it was accidentally put out there.
Sergey Brin is Tony Stark.
I thought Elon Musk was Tony Stark.
No. I think we now know who's Tony Stark. I don't think there's any question. Right. Yes. Oh, Elon Musk has space. But
maybe somebody else. I'm sure other people are working on wearable technology.
Lots of people are.
So, you know.
Lots of people are.
Is this a preemptive?
Lots of people are farther along.
Google's secret project I'm most excited about is the self-driving cars.
Those things are amazing.
Microsoft's got apparently something that they...
You want to talk about trust?
Called Fortaleza glasses. Trust.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, it's too bad because one of those self-driving cars will get in an accident, and the thing is it'll get in an accident based on a type of error that a human would make 100 times to one, I think.
Right.
And it'll just bog it down in bureaucracy or something. But.
Anyway, it's exciting. It's cool. And Sergey's got enough money to throw away on a bunch of stuff, autonomous cars,
but
glasses.
I think if they do it right, and like I said, the way that Google's going, being more transparent, open, more social as a company, if they show us what's going on with this thing as they build it, great. Awesome.
Yeah.
I would like to see more. Project X, you know, Batcave, and we don't hear about it in 6 months.
I'd like to see
Project X Batcave. They should add the Batcave to the end of Project X.
The Sergey.
Well, isn't that what Vic said? He said, "I think the more and more I think Sergey Brin is Batman." That's what he said. Not Tony Stark. We're gonna take, you know, choose your comic book hero. We're gonna take a break. Come back with more. Drew Olenoff is here from The Next Web. Jeff Jarvis from BuzzMachine.com and This Week in Google and Dale Prager. I got to find out what David's up to when we come back, because Revision 3 is no longer in your resume.
It's in the past. It's in the past of my resume. And past small part of its current.
All right, we'll find out. When we come back, we'll ask you about that. But as long as we're talking about autonomous vehicles, self-driving vehicles, I want to talk about Ford Motor Company. I've asked them many times, when are you doing autonomous vehicles? And every time I ask, I get a little more. And this last time I was talking to Paul Macarenas, who's the CTO, and Prasad is running their Silicon Valley thing. And they said, well, we're slowly getting there. We're going to have lane detection. So if you go out of the lane, the camera will detect it and let you know. We've got automatic parking. We've got Bliss, which is blind spot. So that more and more, I think, you know, if you go to Ford.com/technology, you can see how much technology they're putting into these cars. They explain to me, they see the car as a platform. The vehicle is a platform, just as a computer is a platform, an operating system is a platform. It's a way, it gives developers sensors, tools, stuff they can interact with, and a full API so you can write software for this thing. That's why they're opening the Silicon Valley branch. Ford now has their first app called My Ford Mobile. It's for BlackBerry, Android, and iPhones. And it is very, very cool. If you need to have the 2012 electric Focus. It will be on the 2013 Fusion, the Energy. The Focus you can get now at your EV certified Ford dealer. And it does some really interesting things. First of all, it tells you what's going on with the car, the state of the charge. You can be in the living room, car plugged in the garage, and you can say, hey, only charge at the lowest rates. It'll save you money. That is actually something that Microsoft did called value charging.
Is it all electric or does it also have gas?
It's all electric. There's no engine in there. By the way, nice car. You haven't driven one of these yet? I thought Ford was a sponsor.
They are, but we didn't have that one.
So sweet. 110 miles per gallon E.
That's pretty dope.
76-mile range. Charges in 2 to 3 hours on the 240-volt charger. And the phone... Like you could say, on the app, you could say, I leave at 8:30 in the morning, make sure the car is 72 degrees. And the reason that is because heating and cooling has to be done from the battery. So it does it while it's plugged in. So the car is, you know, as good temperature as you leave. And it has also some gamification. So it says how much CO2 you've saved. And you have leaderboards on the web, on the My Ford Mobile website. Awesome. I am number one in CO2 savings. They give you eco-friendly routes. I mean, it's just very, very cool. You can see where all the charge stations are, wherever you're going, so you know, you can plug in. I think this is a great example, and I think Ford's doing this to show developers what's possible. So take a look at it. Here's the best way to do it. You go to your EV-certified Ford dealer, bring your smartphone, and say, hey, I want to try the 2012 electric Focus, and I want to try the My4Mobile mobile app. And they'll put the app on the phone, and you're good to go. Or just visit Ford.com/technology. We thank Ford for their support of... I can't do this on my 2012.
Did you get one of those? Did they lend you one?
Mustang. We drove a bunch of them, but they don't. You know, you guys would get them for like a period of time. They'd come and they'd let you have them for an hour.
We would, we'd go shoot all kinds of video. And we had a couple of the guys.
Because you had the film riot guys who were so
good. Well, no, they moved from Florida to Dallas, but no, we've got Jordan Dirtinger and Josh Viegas.
You've got some good people.
And you know, we have our production in our editorial calendars, and we put for them. You know, what are you doing tomorrow? We're gonna give you the car and just go put GoPros on it and get booty shots of it.
So you founded Revision 3. You and Kevin.
Me, Kevin.
It was just you and Kevin.
Jay Adelson.
Jay came in later, but it was really you and Kevin at first. You did.
Well, actually, it was Dan Heward and Kevin who decided. Oh,
they were doing System.
Let's do a show called System, which is kind of a hacker show. It's a little bit more project based than The Broken, which was how to social engineer people.
Right. It was great stuff. I wish they'd still do that.
And so they launched that independent of me. And then when I got to be friends with, I was friends with them. And then Jay got involved because he thought it was cool. And he's like, hey, man, there's a lot of people watching this. Maybe you can, get an audience for it. I'll give you $50,000.
Jay funded it initially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was his.
But you worked your butt off because it was all Prager for a long time.
So they had that. They started a bank account, put the $50,000 in there. And then, right as that was going on, let's get someone to help, from a, and every hat kind of person. So, Prager can produce and he can come up with random biz dev ideas and maybe start selling. I had no idea
how to sell stuff.
And it worked early on for us because I think, I think a traditional salesperson would have been kind of thinking inside the box of how that works. Mm. And there was no box for me.
Right.
And it wouldn't have worked if I had that because I would have gone after brands and agencies who had no budget placed in it at all.
Right. Right.
So I just went after people like, hey, we've got a show that targets the type of people that like your stuff. Right. How about if we can sell some of your stuff, you give us some money back? And then got them to say yes on that. Now, of course, we're in a vastly different world where a company like Ford is really smart.
Isn't that amazing?
In putting money into a budget really for digital distribution because...
Yeah. You guys broke through on a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
That
it was cool. It was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Well, you also proved the ability of podcasts, the unaided recall to advertisers numbers I got when I wrote about Revision 3 was phenomenal, that 90-some percent of the audience would know that the Zune sponsored...
Yeah, it was cool. And that was just that was part of the what went into the sales tools is knowing that you can demonstrate that you have an engaged audience.
Right.
And an engaged audience reacts to sponsors. And absolutely the exact same thing how they relate to all the Twitch shows.
Fast forward, a couple of pivots with Revision 3. I know Kevin kind of dialed out a little bit. Jay left. Mm-hmm. And then
they all went to work at Dig.
There was
and
a
I
mistake.
Said, I don't want to do Dig.
You
want
were
to do
so
Dig.
Smart.
Gonna...
You did not. You
well,
did
we
not
were,
go
we
over
were
there.
Like we were like the small little sister company. And I even remember when Current TV wanted to purchase Dig, and they were they were one of the only two companies that actually put an offer out for Dig. Actually, even though everyone thinks they're
getting
offers left and right, and. And so Current, just as a side note later, I'm like, yeah, you can throw in Revision 3, too. And I was like, well, yeah, I just toss in Revision 3. Like, what the hell?
Yeah. Wow. Wow.
So, dodge that bullet, man.
Yeah, no kidding. That could have been really bad.
There were a couple of pivots. But
there was a pivot. One was the YouTube pivot, where you, instead of producing your own shows, you started to bring in successful YouTube people, and work with them to make their shows better, to build their audience. That was a smart move.
Yeah.
And I think also you had some great biz dev, and you got in with Discovery, and Discovery paid more and more attention and eventually bought Revision 3 just a few months ago for, we heard, $30 million. Is that about right?
It was more than that. But
More than that?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah. Then another
that
thing.
Makes Leo happy.
Then another thing I heard. Well,
our cry from Hot Rod.
Yeah, I heard. I
don't know how happy I am.
You had Brian on here, and you grilled the crap out of him, and then you know. You're like, what the hell? And we were absolutely thrilled to. They ended up purchasing the company because they believed in what we were already doing and wanted to be able to have those resources and have a digital arm and even have an office in San Francisco.
That makes
sense.
And
then they were also interested, which was, flattering to us, is they have a back catalog of stuff that they own. And they know that our strategy is monetization exclusively via digital. And they said, and, they've got some smart people there, but they said, you guys know that better than us. We're interested in, you know, having you guys on the team so that we can understand how to better take advantage of what we're currently doing, whether it's for our existing television properties or new things that we're developing.
Makes sense.
Yeah, so that was flattering as well. So,
well, I think it's also the case that a cable channel needs a digital arm because they are not allowed by their deals with the cable companies to take their existing content and start to put that on the net. It's really a touchy subject for the cable companies. And so they need to make new content that is net only. Mm-hmm. And I think
this
Discovery
is exactly what messed up Current, I would argue. Current should have been the first all digital, all online channel. And I even said that to them way back when. And others did as well. And no, they were drawn by the money of the MSOs, of the cable operators.
They also could have been, I think Current could have been YouTube, quite frankly. Exactly. I mean, they were asking people to send in their stuff. And instead of putting it online for everyone else to, quote unquote, vote up and vote down, or just to decide what needs to go on TV, it's like, why don't you just show it everything to everyone?
Yeah. Instead, they made it a cable channel, and they got tied in the same way Tech TV had gotten tied by the MSO agreement.
And there's a new channel. There's a new thing coming out right now from Cory Booker, the mayor of Newark, the much-beloved mayor of Newark, that's starting a whole new service that basically, I'm told, is trying to do Current done right.
Interesting.
Just announced yesterday.
What is it about politicians they want to do TV?
Corey's everywhere. That dude's saving people from burning buildings.
I know.
He's on Twitter.
He's a comic book.
He's Tony Stark, maybe. In any event, I hope you guys all got some money out of this. I talked to somebody who said founders didn't get as much as maybe the existing managers. They wanted to keep some of the existing managers around.
Well, anytime there's an acquisition, I mean,
how come they didn't lock you in?
Well, they locked in several people, and I didn't want to get locked in, and I was a little bit surprised. But I mean, I'm surprised at my own thoughts about it. But after having worked on and with and for Revision 3 for 7 years, and I had always been passionate about being a TV producer type of person, but I'd also been exposed to so much of the Silicon Valley technology world and the things that we're talking about here, and then just the startup community. And I've made so many friends and learned so many things about, running businesses, starting businesses, and then having passions about, creating products and services.
So you're going to follow in Kevin's footsteps.
No. I'm not going to be an investment. I'm not going to be a venture capitalist. But I thought that it would be a good time to what I enjoy doing most is kind of content and editorial and even being a journalist. And not that that's what I'm going to focus on, but I thought, so at Revision 3, I'm going to continue doing a couple of productions, but it's fun to not have that be, a full-time job where even as a founder, you feel compelled, this is my full-time job. I need to be there,
right.
9 to 5 or at the very, very, very least. And so right now it's kind of fun. I feel like I can work only for myself.
Right.
And so at Revision 3, I'm doing two experiments. One of them is I'm playing around with Glenn McElhose, who was the camera guy.
Glenn's the guy.
Indignation.
Yeah.
And we would sometimes be like the two guys behind the scenes that would talk a lot. And I think, I don't know, I hope I'm wrong, but I think there's a vocal minority that said, hey, you guys could just, have similar type of conversations and do that. And it's really, quite frankly, easy to
bring
do.
Back
to so
this
we
is
have,
otherwise known as Hippie Glenn. Right?
Yeah, Hippie Glenn.
Hippie
so
Glenn.
We have all the feeds and stuff, and we told people, hey, we're going to put out a couple things. If you don't like it, we hope you will. If
you mean
don't
the
like
behind
it,
the
that.
Scenes from Dignation
no,
with
we have
you and Hippie Glenn?
No, the feeds. We have we have all the Dignation feeds. So in a way, it's like, all right, we have this many subscribers. Bam, here's content. There'll probably be some haters. I hope they're not. We
kind of
put it that
way.
We'll say if you don't like it, we hope you do. Right. So, quite frankly, it's going to be he and I having some discussions about a few things that we're interested in, and then I want to bring in a lot of guests.
Good.
So I had a guy named Barrett Lyon on who's going to be on in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And we had him tell his whole history about deleting AOL from being an existing online entity, and just talking about how his experience in starting CDNs and how that stuff works. And then I want to bring on more and more people. And I thought that would be kind of fun, and so. The formula is easy because we just, we sit there, turn the camera on, and hit the red light, and then we've got a great guy named Michael Hyung who was a fan who's great with Adobe Premiere Pro. He wants to shoot and edit. So for me, it's spend an hour and a half.
Content.
I'll spend an hour and a half or more a week doing that, and then the other big project I'm doing, which I haven't mentioned too much, or the other Revision 3 thing, is we shot a bunch of pilot stuff with some high speed cameras, and so we're going to do a weekly show where there's a story around something that involves. a payoff of what a high-speed camera can do. And one of them was I got stung by a scorpion.
Ow.
Here.
Yeah, this
you
is
you did that on a high-speed camera? You on purpose?
Yeah, it's showing up on the camera. 1,650 frames a second.
Wow.
But there's a little story arc around this. And it's not an original idea.
So it'll be super
idea,
slow-mo stuff.
Yeah. Or we can, we'll do time-lapse or do macro stuff. every week there'll be a little story around something like, what's it look like when a scorpion stings somebody? But we'll put some story around it. And then, you know, we're doing another one at the House of Arrow with some aerialists like gold medalist Johnny Mosley and some of those people. And then the rest of the days of the week, we'll just put out cool videos that with those.
It sounds like you're pretty well employed. You're not really gonna have a lot.
But those
of
are just
time.
No. Those are two little projects. I got two other things. I mean, I could dive into two other things.
What else are you doing?
Let's hear it.
All right, I don't want to waste too much time. So I'm working with Randi Zuckerberg and helping her build her company.
It's Mark's, kind of Mark's a media sister.
Company. Yep. Yeah. So I've been friends with her for a long time, and she's got some aspirations, and she's raising money, and she's getting it. She doesn't need to raise money, but she's raising it anyway. Right. And so I'm going to help her build this company up. So I'm excited about, you know,
as an
advisor. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's R2Z Media, and now it's R2Z Studios.
Okay.
I told her to name it RJZ, and she just changed it to R2Z. So I felt flattered that she picked a similar name.
You told her
name.
To drop the.
No, I said I should just, her initials, RJZ.
That was a Facebook reference.
Yeah. Drop the that. And then the last thing I'm doing is I'm advising a team of a very small team of guys that do an app called Yard Sale. It's at getyardsale.com, but it's an app. I can take a picture of this mug, as many as I want, say what it is, and say how much I want, and it's for sale online. And it's geolocation.
That seems like it'd be easy to raid.
Let's talk about that. I work with a bunch of local newspapers.
Uh-huh.
And I've wanted to do just that time and time and time again, and there's a business deal to be done there.
Well, this also is the it'll auto-publish to Craigslist as well. So as far as I can tell, that's the absolute fastest way you can put anything on Craigslist.
Wow.
So we're going to make
that sounds like a good that's a good start.
We're going to make a run for Craigslist and make a run for eBay.
Yeah.
So nice. We'll see what happens. And then taking advantage of, you know, you could have it, you know, like a traditional yard sale, people just, hey, who's selling something nearby? I just want to know what it is.
Seems like the best way to raise money is to do something that is kind of like the next Instagram or the next eBay, that kind of thing. Because people get it immediately and they go, oh. Right. This is a great idea.
Making those things easier, too.
Instead of saying it's just, hey, here's the mobile version of it, it's also, you know, let's take advantage of the tools that a mobile phone provides,
right.
Which is, quite frankly, right now, the biggest cool thing is, you know, hyperlocation, geolocation. So I could say anytime someone's selling a kitchen item, like a mug, I just want to let me know. A kitchen item within a mile or within 5 miles or within 50 miles.
Right.
That is pretty
cool. And then
you've
got, you know, all kinds of little biz dev things you could do. You could have them delivered via TaskRabbit or other. I mean, none of that is in place, but, you know, there's ideas like that. And then payment systems and da da da. So has nothing to do with TV production, which is still my passion. But you know, doing mobile apps and stuff, and having something that you can get passionate about and excited about, which I'm excited about, this is pretty exciting and pretty.
That is really neat. This looks like a great startup. Yeah. Well, good for you.
Yeah.
Right on. You're staying busy.
I'm busy. Yeah.
Yeah. Good for you. Spending a little of that discovery money in some good places.
It
sounds good.
Well, it gives you freedom. I didn't make a ton. I mean, I made enough that I can.
Enjoy yourself
a
little bit.
Step back, not worry about, you know, paying my mortgage. I can focus on some projects and take a little bit of a risk without, you know, worrying about losing my house.
Right.
So.
Makes perfect sense. Well, congratulations.
Thanks.
That's great.
That's awesome.
We're going to move on. There is more tech news. In fact, just a bit, I have to talk about this band phone that you have here. I want to read you the patent because it doesn't make any sense.
It won't make sense to anyone.
When you read the patent, there are four patents that Samsung and Apple are fighting over.
Right.
One of them is slide the lock. But the judge focused on one particular patent and said, you know what, based on this patent, I'm going to ban the sale of this phone. And when I read it to you, I'll let you be the judge. But we're going to do that in just a second. Squarespace.com before we get any further. You use Squarespace. I know you do.
Yeah, those guys are great.
I use Squarespace. That's what it is. It's about the people who work at Squarespace who've put together the best hosting ever. You cannot bring a Squarespace site down. We try constantly. You can't. Go to InsideTwit.tv. That's our blog. InsideTwit.tv. Go ahead, all of you. Every one of you. And you can't bring it down. And the best content management software on top of that. So it's everything you need to create a great website. They have, by the way, when you buy a year plan, which you should do, you will get your domain, the whole thing, the custom domain and everything all integrated in. It's just part of the sign-up. So it could not be easier to set up a site to save money. And even if you cancel, the site is yours to keep. So, I mean, it's your domain name. So here's what you do. Go to squarespace.com. Click the green try it free button. You don't need a credit card. Just your name, your email, the name of your site, and a password. For 2 weeks, you get to use the – whoops, that's the wrong page. Let me go back to Squarespace. You get to use the full Squarespace software, all, you know, the iOS and Android apps that let you post, update, moderate, check stats. They've got photo galleries. They've got forms. I love this. You can import your existing data in very easily. They support the four big APIs, WordPress, Blogger, Movable Type, and Typepad. And when you do this import, everything, not just the blog posts and comments, all the media is moved over. All the URLs continue to work. All of your data is there. And if you decide to move on, I know you're not, but if you did, you can get it all out again. You're never trapped at Squarespace. And there's probably a bunch of people who used iWeb on MobileMe who today are going, uh-oh.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-oh. We get, never use a solution that traps you. Squarespace lets you move on if you want. But you're not going to want to. Here's the deal. Go visit, try it for 2 weeks, then check out the pricing. This is the new pricing scheme they've got. $8 billed annually for the basic. I would get the unlimited plan. $16. Unlimited pages, unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage.
Nothing.
For $16 a month, that's everything. And the free custom domain name, which is automatically set up, 24/7 support. They have some interesting features like audiences. You can have password-protected parts of your site. You can have people pay, for instance, to say, you know, you're going to get this extra thing. That's an audience. Unlimited editors, complete control, form builder, user registration, business features, all available. $16 a month with billed annually and the domain name registration and connection. For both beginners and experts alike, this is the best solution. Squarespace.com. If you buy, by the way, use our offer code. In the month of July, it's TWIT7. It's always the month, the TWIT plus the month number. So if you're listening in August, TWIT8. But if you're listening in July, well, some people will listen next month, right?
Yeah.
For this month, it's TWIT and the number 7, all one word. And you can get 10% off your first purchase. So that makes it even more affordable. Squarespace.com. I gotta find the patent for this. I actually found it on the U.S.
While you're looking for it, I can make a patent rant.
Yeah, please do. So,
I think Google, it could be easily just as guilty. I think what's happening here is horrible, but it's just an example of how terrible software patents are.
So I'll read the abstract.
How many companies did we see doing billion-dollar acquisitions for patent portfolios? It's so that they can use it against their competition. Yes, there's articles that show that maybe they're afraid of a lot of these features, but Google and Microsoft and Apple will all litigate over patents, guaranteed, and they will do it in ways that 90%, 99% of all of us think is BS.
Well, let me read you the patent you tell me. So Judge Koh said, Samsung had sued 7 months ago over the Galaxy Nexus, saying it violated four patents. Judge Koh said, you know what? Patent 604 is germane. I am going to block sales of the Galaxy Nexus. Apple, you need to post a $96 million bond in case this is bogus. Right. But for now, we're going to accept this and file an injunction. You cannot sell the Galaxy Nexus in the U.S. based on this patent. Now, I'm going to read it to you. You tell me what this means. This is the abstract. This is Apple's patent. They applied for it in 2004, got it in 2011. The present invention provides convenient access to items of information that are related to various descriptors input by a user, like a search term, by means of a unitary interface which is capable of accessing information in a variety of locations through a number of different techniques. In other words, it's like Siri, where you'd say, search for Drew's hat. Mm. It would look at a variety of locations, a variety of services, maybe Wolfram Alpha and Google or whatever, and in a unitary surface, this is the quote again, using a plurality of heuristic algorithms to operate on information descriptors input by the user, the present invention locates and displays candidate items of information for selection or retrieval. Just like Siri, is this what you were looking for? Thus, the advantages of a search engine can be exploited by listing only relevant object candidates. Items of information. That's the patent.
Jesus.
They basically patented search.
Amazon patented one-click purchase.
But one-click, there's a physical thing. You're clicking it once.
I know, but there's
something
stupid
there. This is a patent for if I give you some stuff, you show me the results in a page.
Right. Mm-hmm. So basically nobody can ever make a phone that shows search results ever again other than Apple.
Well, and if I'm a librarian and I go in and I ask and you ask me questions and I give you back a list of possible choices, have I violated a patent? I mean,
That's a you have. You violated 604. Right. Now, I do not It's unified search, so it's kind of the idea is one page, right. Variety of sources pulled into one page.
Well, it's just one of those. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, and I don't understand these things, and I know they run really deep. But at the same time, I mean, it's just
bugs the hell out of me.
And
this is huge. This is a great phone that Apple is preventing people from buying. And I'll tell you right now, it's not because Apple says, well, we patented that. It's because Apple is scared to death of the Nexus phone. It's better than the iPhone.
I see that argument. I don't know about scared to death, but it's a threat, right? If they thought it was a piece of crap, there's many phones. There are phones, especially Android phones. There's a billion of new ones a day.
Well, also, half of the features in Jelly Bean are amazing. The new features. They're right. Great. Like, I use an iPhone, and I want a bunch of those features, which, you know, right. I think people at Apple should, in a way, if they want to develop things that function similarly, they should be able to. But I bet you that, you know, Google might end up suing them for copying features that are in
Well, that's the thing, but it comes down to, well, who has enough, who's got the real patent portfolio?
Right, but these pieces
it doesn't
are
come
ever
down
changing.
To what's good for consumers, what's exactly. Actual innovation. We are wasting, I just heard a number. Was it you, Jeff? No, Kevin Marks had this number in your place on Twig this week. An estimate of how much is lost each year in patent litigation that could be put in. And it was billions. It was like $24 billion.
Is there anything we can do? I mean, you know, there's a nascent effort to start a boycott Apple movement, but I don't buy that's going to work right. For a second. Is there anything that we as the people they supposedly care about, the customers, can do?
I think, and I don't know if it would work, but I think that the U.S. Patent Office needs to stop granting stupid patents. Because they all expire eventually. If they stopped right now, because patents are valuable and Google has valuable patents and so does Apple, and they can't give those up. They're not willing to give those up. But you can start now by stopping this stupid software patent BS. Right. Stop granting software patents that are stupid now.
Fortunately, Chad has a good memory. You can just say it on mic, Chad. It's $29
billion. Yeah, $29 billion.
So, I mean, every year.
In direct costs.
Not indirect costs.
And that's just last year.
Not indirect, just actual court costs.
But here's the thing. Innovation actually happens not with individual patents and individual software things. It's these pieces all put together, right? Creating the best experience and doing the best thing. And Apple's a company that will be the first to tell you that they'll copy off of everybody and they don't care, right? They do
Look
it the
best. Look at notifications on iOS. That's an Android ripoff.
Right. Well, they wanted.
There was a great picture online today from an earlier Samsung media player that had, you know, a grid of icons that, gosh, looks just like, you know, an iPhone.
So my question is the point of this to get license fees from Google, which is fine if that's all it is, or is the point of this mutually assured destruction? What is it? What do they want? What do you want? What does Apple want?
They just want to throw a stick in their spokes. I mean, because people do it to them too. But the other thing is now that these companies have been around for so long, engineers and software developers are starting to leave one company for another company, and these ideas happen. I don't know what that patent means at all. But to say that someone who may have worked at Apple a long, long time ago and is working at Google and works on a similar idea, how do you stop and block these things, and how do you call a it's mind-boggling.
Look, the boycott's not going to work. Apple's going to sell. In fact, one of the analysts just said that they thought the iPhone 5 was going to be the biggest consumer electronics launch in history. Hmm. And they may be right.
Yeah.
It's not going to – but I think we need to yell. We all need to yell. We need to say, Apple, what the hell are you doing? This is not right.
You want to make the best stuff, make the best stuff.
Make the best stuff.
And then –
compete. Don't litigate.
Right.
You know, I think one well-timed demonstration in front of an Apple store to say we're ashamed of you, Apple. We'll get more media attention, more press. You know, Apple fanboys disappointed in our God.
That would be kind of cool.
Well, I think that's the other thing too. Is this Apple versus Google, or is this Apple's lawyers versus Google's lawyers?
It's Steve Jobs.
I mean, lawyers.
It's Steve Jobs. This is the legacy of Steve Jobs. Right. He said, "We will." It's scorched earth. It's nuclear war. We are going to annihilate Google. Yeah. They stole the Google Android was stolen from Apple, and we're going to annihilate them.
Well, and we saw who was the last company that went after Google and didn't win?
I don't know who.
Is that Oracle?
Oracle. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Oracle for Java.
That didn't go so
They bought Sun Microsystems and
fell flat on their damn face. Yeah. So a couple of those happen, and then it's not going to be such a sexy
proposition.
But
that was over not licensing the professional version of Java.
Right.
So what do you think? So you get Nexus, moving on. Nexus 7.
Yeah.
Nexus 7. This is the tablet.
Right.
This is $200. This is Google says we're not making any money on this. This is what it costs us. $250 with 16 gigs. 8 gigs is $200. Do you like it?
Yeah. I mean, so I wrote a piece about it, reviewing it, and I didn't want to talk about whether – I didn't want to compare it to the iPad. I didn't want to compare it to the Kindle Fire.
Hi.
For $200, it's obvious
that
it
doesn't recognize me. No, oh, you put face recognition in.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So
that is awesome.
Right. So we got to do this.
Let's see it work. So it's a picture of Drew, and it immediately unlocked it. That's much better, by the way, than it was. Yeah, it's really improved.
So it's okay. So it's just Wi-Fi. It's not 3G. It's not, you know. So you're going to use this at home. For me, I'm somebody who's always on my computer or on my phone, and I don't really use an in-between device. But I think, you know, my
I think 7 inches is a good size for a portability.
They said we've always wanted to do a 7-inch, and I was like, why? And because it's kind of like a bigger phone and a smaller tablet.
We got to get you on
Wi-Fi. But they liked it. It feels good in the hands. It's well made. The screen is crystal clear.
And it's a little dim, but usable.
If you're a Google service user, if you're big into YouTube, if you use Gmail a lot, obviously Jelly Bean does a great job with all the services.
It feels pretty fast. It feels pretty slippery.
And it's really fast. I mean, it's 8 gig for $200, $249 for $16.
It's now, the real – this is not aimed at the iPad. This is aimed at the Kindle, right?
Kindle Fire, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's for people who don't have a tablet right now, probably. I can't see a lot of iPad users running out and buying one. Unless they're – unless they're Google service users. Google Plus on it is gorgeous.
Here's a question. Does Amazon sell another – one more Fire? Or is it done?
No, the Fire 2 is coming out soon.
They better hurry.
Yeah.
They better hurry, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this thing is I think people were shocked at how well it was made.
It's very,
because when you hear $200, you think, wow, that's going to be kind
Didn't
of a
they design it in 4 months?
That's what they said. They said 4 months, and it was based off of something that Asus
showed this at CES basically, and they updated it, but it's but it has a Tegra 3, it's very fast. Mm-hmm. Gigabyte of RAM. It's interesting. Front-facing camera, not
a rear
back camera.
Yeah.
But now I've also seen that Google is going to do gesture based. They're going to do not just face recognition, but they're going to start have game. It looked like they showed. Remember the demo with Cirque du Soleil?
Yeah.
Where it could see your body, and there was an outline. I looked a lot like Kinect.
A lot.
I thought
like
that was
Kinect.
Kind of interesting, using the front facing camera on this in some interesting ways.
And for directions and things, you can use gestures for directions when you're driving.
Yeah.
Right.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
Well, the Kinect throws infrared, right? Or not infrared. Yeah, infrared.
Yeah, it has also three cameras. It has infrared. It has a Z camera for depth. It has. I mean, it's more sophisticated. But you know what? I don't know if that's anything better, frankly. So this isn't $200. I think this is a really compelling product.
It's a device my mom would love, and it's a device that I haven't had a problem using the last couple of days.
Explain this to me for $300.
Don't get it. Okay. I think Prager had some thoughts on it, so I think you should.
One thing I think is great is that this is made in the USA. And it is hackable. They've already said we want people to hack it, right? But what is it? I don't know. This is the Q, the letter Q.
They said cube at first.
Yeah.
Before they showed it, I was like,
shake it up, and it'll tell you your answer is in the future.
No, the volume control spins the top.
That's the volume.
That's the volume.
Yeah. It has 29 LEDs around it that glow blue. That's cool. This is where you hook up speakers because it's got a 25-watt amplifier in it.
Right.
It has a mini HDMI port. They keep saying hook it up to your best TV and speakers. You could. It's like a Sonos. You could have multiple cues in multiple rooms. Somebody could come over with their Android device, Gingerbread or better, and put some music or a video even, if they own it, on here. And then it would play to your TV set.
See, I was just saying it's like a 300% more expensive Apple TV.
Yes. Apple TV is $100.
And part of the problem also is that someone who's willing to spend $300 on that already has a home stereo. They don't need the amp in there. They shouldn't put the
amp in there. That's crazy.
I applaud the Made in the USA, which probably popped the price up a little bit. But other than that, I mean, there's a much better wireless media servers
out there.
This is using all the Google Play stuff. So it's clearly their version of iTunes.
You know what's wrong with this? Netflix. No Amazon.
Yeah, exactly. Services.
It's play.google.com.
It's all play stuff.
Period. and it's $300.
And it's $300.
I don't know who you sell this
and
to.
And it's ridiculously heavy.
They've sold 6,000.
Not that
have they? Oh, yes.
Well, gave away.
Gave away. 6,
if you go back to the VC world, if someone made that as a prototype and went to try and raise money for the company to make those, they wouldn't get any money.
Really? You think
that is absolutely true.
Who'd invest in
absolutely
this?
Absolutely true.
I wouldn't.
Would they get anything on Kickstarter?
You know, Kickstarter's kind
of
cool.
They make a lot of money on Kickstarter. That's a $1 million product.
The fact that it's hackable could be a savior because I did see somebody did – I saw on Google Plus somebody did a video of, you know, what if you could have some widgets up on the screen and do some other things, some social stuff. Sure, that'd be cool. But as it stands right now out of the box, it's like
– I like the packing though. It's very very Apple-y. Apple will sue them over that too, no doubt.
Anything circular.
Yeah. So that's the cue. Not so impressive. I'm not sure. What do you think Google's up to with this? Is this?
Well, it's their whole convergence deal, right? They want you to have the 7-inch tablet. They want you to have the phone and the cup that you drop on the floor.
Was there
water? Nothing in it.
Did you like something in that?
No, I'm good. All right. Thanks.
Get you some whiskey.
That would be nice.
All right.
But I think they just want to have that device for all those. Just like Apple. Just, you know, like Microsoft is going with the Surface. You know, now they have, you know, the Windows, you know, the desktop, Windows 8. Don't get me started about the Surface.
The Surface? I thought I was excited that they did it. Aside from the Xbox, that's their and some peripherals. That's their first major piece of hardware that they make.
Yeah, it is.
And you know they kind of gave the finger to a lot of OEMs. But in a way, it's kind of exciting to me to see.
Ballsy.
It was really ballsy, but I think it's really. I'm excited to see what kind of software they'll make that's custom designed for a controlled. Right. No one likes the controlled walled environment, but they made it, and they're gonna give it a go with Windows 8. And
Windows 8, as it stands right now, is super buggy. On the developer preview or consumer preview, but damn, it's pretty good. And if you're familiar with the Xbox, it's that user interface, right? This is where all three companies are going. You know, Google, Microsoft.
It's the dumbening of America.
It's the convergence.
It's dumbening.
I don't know. Why have three user interfaces when you could have one? You know.
Yeah.
Let everything talk to each other. So
why should there be any diversity? Let's make everything look the same.
But that's what the Q is going.
Can we have a moment of silence? Just a moment of silence. For BlackBerry.
Oy.
RIM's results, they lost $2.8 billion. The analysts thought they'd lose 7 cents a share. They lost 37 cents a share. That's not good when you exceed the analyst estimate by minus 30 cents. Not a good start. They say, and this is the thing that's good. This is the last shovel of dirt on the already almost completely buried company. The next version of the BlackBerry OS, BlackBerry 10, it's delayed. It'll be out maybe next year.
It's funny, when I go to Canada, there's real cognitive dissonance about this because everybody there has a BlackBerry. It's a matter of national pride and loyalty. And it made them, I think, somewhat deaf to the shrugging, laughing reaction to BlackBerry's products in the last 2 years elsewhere in the world.
Sad. I mean, I loved I was a BlackBerry user. I was a big fan. In fact, my last phone before the iPhone was a Curve. I loved BlackBerry.
BlackBerry users are very dedicated. That's an example.
We're dedicated.
Well, is there still value in the BBM? There's a lot of people who really love BBM.
BBM is
a ridiculous thing.
Teenagers. Teenagers love it. High school kids love it. Yes, that's who uses BlackBerry Messenger.
It's kind of similar to Salesforce Chatter.
Right.
Yeah. That's the problem. It's kind of similar to everything that's already.
That's where Apple came out with iMessage. That's their kind of messaging service. Doesn't matter what device you're on.
So. It's really interesting. I mean, what you have to say, this the beginning of the end was the iPhone, right? I think if you're going to say anything, iPhone killed BlackBerry.
But if your next operating system is delayed, then why were you working on the playbook? Why were you working on a tablet if you can't get your operating system out on time? For the people who really care about your device.
Apparently I'm out of date. Teenagers haven't liked the BlackBerry Messenger since 2004.
Someone said that Microsoft should buy BBM and incorporate it into their phones.
They're not teenagers anymore.
I absolutely agree. I think it would make complete sense. That's why Skype bought GroupMe, because to bring messaging and texting into the Skype product, because that's not something they've done. They've focused on voice. I think it would make perfect sense to integrate that. But does it want all of RIM? Or no, does it just want the DVM stuff?
You buy the valuable assets and dissolve the... I don't know. I mean, I don't know a lot about RIM.
What phone do you carry?
I've been an iPhone user for a long time. Yeah. I still am. I'm not that interested in Android, although I should give it a shot because I really like a lot of the... Specifically because I was reading all the news about Jelly Bean, and I like what you can do with the widgets. I like what you have on the new notification capabilities. Yes. And
way smarter notifications.
And I feel stupid for not being familiar with Android. Like, I feel like I want to start using Windows 8, too.
Leo sounds like a real man.
Look, the fish. I feed the fish this. Look, isn't that pretty?
I mean, maybe I'll get one. I don't know.
No, I'm not. But, I don't care what you carry. But carry an iPhone.
It's also I have an extra one. You can
for some reason, all the developers I know, everyone who does mobile development, everyone says they really love and enjoy developing iOS first. And I'm not sure why people hate developing for Android, but I asked tons of developers, and I was surprised because I thought it was a controversial thing. Right. And I was at one of the Carsonified shows for mobile development, and I asked the developers in the audience about developing for iOS versus Android, and they all preferred developing for iOS. I was kind of surprised by that.
I would say one of them is, I think there was Temple Run. So Temple Run finally came out on Android.
Yeah.
And they said that 75% or something like that, 75% of their support, incoming support questions and issues, were because of the devices weren't working with the app. Meaning,
well, let's be fair. There's a much bigger ecosystem because there's lots of choice. You can call it fragmentation, but there's lots of choice in the Android space. There's only, iPhone's iPhone.
Right. You're not developing for a bunch of handsets.
By the way, this is a great game. Look at that. Oh, yeah. And look how good that looks.
A little gaming session here.
Yeah. This is beautiful. This is the brave.
How much is the game?
99 cents. Oh, there's a bear chasing me.
This reminds me so much of Indiana Jones. It's not even funny.
This is
awesome.
A Temple Run, but this is the Disney Brave edition.
Oh, yeah.
So much. Oh, I ran into it. Bear got me.
That's good stuff.
But
if you're a developer, would you go to Android first over iOS?
And I'm sure there's plenty of developers here, so you can correct me here. But there's a lot. I think the primitive support in iOS is better. So things like animation, it's just kind of the libraries are more complete. Is that, would you say roughly that's the case? Android is very cool. There's some really neat stuff, but I think it's just a little rougher. In terms of development, you have to use Eclipse. You're not using Xcode. It's just a little bit. You're a developer. You're kind of nodding. You're agreeing with me, or are you drunk? You tired? No.
Did she get the whiskey? What's going on?
No, I think that's kind of the common point of view. On the other hand, I know a lot of developers, and I include Gina Trapani, who say, "But I don't care because I want to work in an open system. I don't want to have to get Apple to say, okay, you can make your thing."
Yeah.
From a political point of view, Android I think is far far superior. And that's kind of why I support it. I want the openness. By the way, the other problem, Siri only gets its request 62% of the time on a loud street and 68% of the time in the quieter setting.
Really?
How's your Siri experience?
I don't have a 4S.
I don't have a 4S either.
If I was excited about Siri, I would have
Well, Siri doesn't work for either of you guys 100% of the time.
I had the Siri app before they bought it disappeared. And
so Piper Jaffray, which is an analyst company, did 1,600 common searches. They found that the results were not good. About 62% if it was noisy, 68% if it was quiet. A D for accuracy. I find Siri pretty accurate. I use it to dictate. I like it to dictate.
I think it's pretty remarkable. Leo, did you see the clip right above that in the rundown? Is a video with the shootout at the OS Corral with Siri versus Google Jelly Bean voice search, and it's really pretty cool. Putting them one for one against each other.
Oh, let me find that. Because I have to say that at least from terms of capabilities, whether I won't say how well one or the other works, but in terms of capabilities, the Android dictation is better. You can launch applications. You can do a lot of stuff that is only now coming to Siri in iOS 6. Right. So here's the shootout. Who did this?
I forget because that's a link to, I think, Esther Wojcicki's post.
Yeah, she cross-posted it.
Yeah, so I'm sorry. Chad, I should have put the direct link up.
Oh, we get a nice picture of Esther.
Esther's wonderful. Esther is a magnificent high school journalism teacher and mother-in-law to one of Google's founders.
Oh.
And mother to one of Google's major executives.
Of course, because Sergey's wife is Wojcicki. I don't remember her first name. Huh. That's her mom.
What's up, everyone? John Rettinger from Techno Buffalo here with a voice-assisted head-to-head showdown. On the left, we have Siri, and on the right,
we should have done this. We could do this.
Great.
Google's new search found in Android 4.1 Jelly Bean. Let's go ahead and put these guys head-to-head, see who comes out on top.
Oh. Ooh.
It needs like a roar.
What did buffaloes do? Did they
There you go.
Running a pre-release Android 4.1 Jelly Bean. Let's go ahead and exit out. And I'm going to ask it simple questions that I use all the time for my voice assistants. Let's go ahead and get started. What's the weather?
It's 18 degrees with haze.
Nice weather coming up through tonight. 79 degrees and partly sunny.
There seems to be
Galaxy Nexus came through first. And actually, the voice, if you guys could hear it, was a little less robotic on the Galaxy Nexus than it is on Siri. In fact, let me just go ahead and do a quick demonstration
in
here.
In both cases, you have to learn how to use this. Yeah. You have to learn how to speak to it. You have to learn what...
Yeah.
The forecast for Irvine today is 29 degrees and clear.
So it sounds a little more human-like in the Celsius because I haven't changed those settings yet. Let's go ahead and try something new.
Yeah, this is very unscientific because this is for his results.
Yeah. Sure.
And that's the problem.
Set a timer for 10 minutes.
I guess the point is that...
10 minutes and counting.
So that was almost exactly the same time, but it looked like the Galaxy Nexus actually came through a little bit faster. Let's go ahead...
And this is Jelly Bean? Right. Yeah, it's Jelly Bean.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's a little bit better, it looks like, than the...
Who won the Angels game yesterday?
The Angels beat the Orioles.
One moment. The Angels definitively beat the Orioles.
See, yes, but Siri says definitively. And this is a perfect example. Yeah, look how nice it looks. They add things like definitively.
Sure.
The results are there from Google, and they're faster.
What about the Easter eggs? Like, what if you ask it to open the pod bay doors? It
doesn't do any of that stuff. Yeah.
You know, what I really want to do is I want to figure out a way, Chad, work on this, to get the two of them into an argument.
That would be fun.
Talking to each other.
That's like in the old days.
That's like the Furbies.
Yeah.
Where you get the two Furbies sitting there.
But how many consumers are actually going to, like,
I think
put the
very
two
few
phones
people
together
actually and... even use these features. I think it requires some, you have to remember the syntax, you have to remember to press the button. I use Siri a lot. I do actually text. When I do text, I often will speak texts.
Nice.
The other problem is that when it makes a mistake, it's such a pain in the ass. And that's the problem with all voice dictation.
Sure.
If it's 100% perfect, it's great. If it's 5% off, if it's 95% perfect, that means, you know, one time every 20 times you use it, you got to fix it. And that's a kind of a pain. So
it's difficult technology.
And then there's the issue, of course, of looking like a complete nitwit as you walk down the street talking to your phone.
Yeah.
Yelling at your phone, more likely. I am happy. The new iPhone, good news and bad news. The good news is NFC, it looks like. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a lot of rumors. That will, with the Passbook, will make a huge difference. I think that will put NFC over the top. These phones have NFC already, the Android phones. And now that iPhone, if it comes out with iPhone 5 with NFC, I think that's going to be great. It means you'll tap things. When you came in, I don't know if you noticed it, everybody should know, there's a sticker on the wall that says, tap this to check in on Foursquare.
There's no way.
But you have to have NFC.
Oh, so you got the whatchamacallit.
Yeah, it's Tektiles from Samsung.
But I think the best thing that Apple will do and what the users won't be thinking of it as NFC. They're going to be like, I have my Passbook and I tap my phone
on
the thing.
Exactly. They don't need to know NFC.
Yeah, exactly. So Apple's very good at leaving the technology out of the technology.
Right.
And Google has a lot of catch up to do on that. But
the negative is Apple, apparently in this new iPhone, is going to eliminate the 30-pin connector and have a now completely incompatible connector, which won't work with any of my stuff. And I'm
pissed. No, it's not even USB?
No, it's a 19-pin proprietary connector.
It's still USB. It's just the different connector at the bottom.
Well, you still plug it into the wall to charge it.
Yeah, or the computer. Okay,
but it's not USB.
Son Jake is teaching at ID Tech Camp, which is a great organization in Princeton this summer, and he's teaching programming iOS apps. So we just went through the house last night to find extra iPod, iTunes, whatever. Charging cables so that his eight students could all use them to charge at the same time. Mm. And, we found 10 of them around the house. And now we're going to have to go off and buy 10 more.
And then every time you lose one, you'll have to...
Yeah.
I've lost so many of those things over the years. Yeah, that's weird.
Hi.
I have a $200 radio that has a 30 pin connector on it. I have a dock for my Sonos dock is a 30 pin connector. I don't know.
Accessory companies are screwed because the little docks and the little things and all the little.
Now I'm hoping, and I don't think Apple will do this. I mentioned this on Mac Break Weekly. I apologize if you watch that show and you're hearing this again. But I'm hoping Apple will make a little adapter that will snap in and will give it the 30-pin connector. And I know that's the last thing Apple would ever do.
Dream on.
Yeah. Okay. I was just hoping. I'm just saying I'm hoping.
The iBridge.
We're going to take a break. If you did not watch our shows this week, this is what you might have missed. Roll it.
This is Twit.
He's going to try to.
It has to be illegal.
How do you get a license?
Oh, my God. He jumps. Oh, my God. They jumped. That is incredible. Look at the view. Look at this. Unbelievable.
I'm carrying a cloud in my hand. You should see this. This is incredible. It's the pogo plug.
Oh. Oh.
Really sounds
this
good.
Is before you buy John Shen.
Has a galaxy Sonos. Note, them holding it? No, okay, that's fine, because that's a pose. We want you to go undercover and get that picture of that girl across the aisle on the subway, or that guy over the shoulder at the library. Like, that's what we're looking for.
This guy, single-handedly, has set back marijuana legalization by 100 years, which ironically takes it all the way back to when it was legal.
No more pot. No more pot.
Ted MacArthur, AC7II, and his super secret spud gun for launching antenna support systems way up in the trees.
Those hams are crazy. Here.
Whoa.
Twit. If it happens in the world of technology, we've got your back.
That was this. All of that was this week on our shows. Ham Nation before you buy.
Pretty wild.
Some stuff, huh?
Who cut it all together? That's cool.
We're going to start doing that on a regular basis because I think people don't know. They watch this show and they go, oh, that I saw Twit. There's, what is it, 25 shows?
We need Twit Center.
27 like shows?
27 shows.
All together.
Twit Center. Twit Center. Anyway, we're going to start doing that just so you can see some of the things
Discovery,
you might have missed.
What a small child. What a nothing. Compared to what Leo has.
How much more than 30 million alarm? A big chunk more than 30 million.
Can you show us with jelly beans?
Yeah. So each of these jelly beans represents now.
If each of these beans were $1 million, just count them out. That's all right. And then show us how many you ate. So, he won't.
The count is on. Pretty good. We got one so
this
far.
This show brought to you, as always, by our good friends at Audible, the audiobook place of just exceptional stuff. 100,000 plus titles. I'm going to show you how you can get 2 free right now. Visit audible.com/twit2. You'll be signing up for the Platinum account. And that gives you 2 books a month. But your first month is free. Your first 2 books are free. 2 credits anyway. Most books are 1 credit. But if like Game of Thrones is 2 credits, a really long book sometimes aren't. Anybody here listen to audio books at all? Anybody?
I listened to the Steve Jobs book.
That was good. Actually, that was the only way to really get through that in a fast way. I really enjoyed it.
I listened to all these spoken word stuff, including Audible, while running. A lot of people listen to music. I go running, and you get so into the story that you keep running.
I know. Hear more. That's the idea. It's good for your exercise. Yeah. I do that on the gym. Now, we may not have people who listen to Audible, but we have somebody who's read 2 Audible books so far, right here sitting to my left. Mm. Both of your books are on Audible.
Right. That's right. And pity the poor producer who had to say to find 100 million ways to say to me, Jeff, could you take that again a little slower?
Wait a minute, let's listen. This is the latest. Public Parts, how sharing in the digital age
also easier
improves the
as
way
I always have
and
researchers
live.
And editors at the ready. At this moment, I'm at my laptop trying to catalog the benefits of publicness.
This is good, Jeff.
As a reflex, I turn to Twitter and ask people
what
new and valued relationships.
You're good at this. This is good. It's in your voice. It's personal.
What you can also do with Audible is you can speed it up if you want. So you can speed Jeff up to his normal speed if you want.
That's on those Audible apps. Now on Windows Phone, by the way. They just came out with a Windows Phone. Of course, Android and iOS as well. You got to get the Audible app. There's some really good books on here. I'm listening to about 3 audiobooks at the same time. That's kind of how
I roll.
I listen to The Stand. Well, The Stand is like 800 hours, so you just keep listening. This is Stephen King, but really good. Really, really good. That's a new version of that just recorded. I'm listening to Baratunde's How to Be Black because I have that's ambitions.
Right. I haven't listened to that yet. That's
he reads. Well, let's play a little bit of Baratunde.
I love Baratunde.
People of American opportunity could be satisfied either through a comprehensive program of economic and political empowerment.
You know what I like about him? You can tell he's smiling the whole time. Every time Baratunde, he's smiling. You can see
he
the
exudes smart ass.
Yeah.
With that's, emphasis on the smart.
That's a great book. Kevin Smith has a new book. You does look kind of like Kevin Smith.
Does
that's
he
the
know?
Yeah. It's called Tough Poof, Life tough Advice from a Fat, Lazy Slob Who Did Good.
Nice.
That's that. He took my title. So the Nerdist Hardest has a Hardwick has a book. The Nerdist, How to Reach the Next Level, The Nerdist Way. Look, I can't go on. There's so many choices. This is the problem. You go to audible.com, browse around. Pick the book you want to listen to. It plays on all of your devices, you know, all your iDevices, your Android devices, your iPad. It also, it plays on like a lot of GPSs and stuff like that. It doesn't yet play on the Google Q, but could you work on that and make that happen? Because that needs, it really needs to. And then go to audible.com/twit2 and you get two books absolutely free. Cancel anytime. Those books are yours to keep forever. Thank you, Audible, for your support. Audible podcast. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Just Audible. Audible.com/twit2. Penn Jillette's got a new book.
Whoa.
Yeah.
He's lost Leo.
Can I play a little bit of Penn Jillette? Because he's got that voice. He's got the voice.
Professional dishwasher. I worked with a man named Harold.
Right, that's all you need to hear.
Professional dishwasher.
I worked with a man named Harold. Harold, I said. It's called God No, Signs You May Already Be an Atheist.
Oof. That's good stuff.
Yeah. Penn does not pull punches. No. That's one thing. Did you work with Penn when he did that show?
I didn't, although Ryan Vance, you know him. He went down to his house. We set up a little studio for him.
Crazy.
Basically, it was we put a bunch of cameras, and he likes to just look at cameras and speak his mind. And then we'd take those and chop them together, or pretty much edit them together, put a couple images in there. And
that's self-screen. Huge. Huge. Is he still doing it?
No, he stopped doing it.
Yeah.
And now, well, he's got another show.
He's
now.
Got a new TV show.
Is it on? No. It may.
Soon.
I'm just wondering if it's on Discovery or not.
Well, it doesn't matter.
You heard it here
It's
first.
Like one of those science-type channels.
So, a couple of days ago, I'm trying to take some pictures of my food and post it on Instagram, and I couldn't. So I had to actually go around the restaurant and show everybody. it's a bad joke. Instagram was down. Spotify was down.
Netflix looked like the real food.
Yeah, I had somebody tweeted, "I'm living life unfiltered." Help.
MG Siegler, he's got so many followers. He said, "My ego's getting destroyed because I'm not getting all the likes on my photos."
And he's in, you know, he's in France, yes, right. So he wants to show his great photos. So it was all because everybody uses Amazon Web Services. They were down, and it was a pretty bad crash due to, get this, storms in Northern Virginia.
Yeah.
We say redundancy?
No.
Hard to believe.
Really is.
It was very hard to believe.
Pinterest was down?
Pinterest was down.
10 years from now, we're going to find out it was some kind of cyber terrorism.
You know, right. You know what? Well, for one thing, everybody published the story as if North Virginia were a state. Capital N, capital V.
Right.
Like there's a North Virginia. There is no North Virginia. There's North Carolina. There's North Dakota. There's one Virginia. There's a West
there's a
Virginia.
Northern part of it.
There's a Northern Virginia. Notice
well,
I
but
said.
The truth is, Leo, there is a Northern California.
Yeah. Well, they actually, in similar ways, there's a North Virginia because that's the liberal part of the state up by Washington. And the rest of Virginia is not.
No.
You're nodding. Are you from Virginia, sir? Yeah, he's nodding. He knows.
No.
Do you live
his
in
fault.
North Virginia or South Virginia? He lives in Richmond. So that's kind of the
that's
central
the exception.
Virginia.
That's like East West Berlin.
Richmond's is an area carved out. Hey, but what's your name again? Kevin, thank you for letting us use your cue, by the way. Do you want it back?
He doesn't want to carry it.
We have plenty, believe me. I understand that when you go through the airport x-rays, though, they pretty much assume that's a bomb.
Yeah, take that sucker out.
Just a word of warning. I just put it on the thing. And by now, enough people have left San Francisco with these things that they're probably all right. Thank you for helping us out, Kevin. I appreciate it. So, yeah, it's a little scary that but I think you might be right, Kevin, because the storm story doesn't sound... That doesn't sound right.
I love that you called me Kevin. That's
I was
awesome.
Going to say something, but I was going to let it go. I was not going to say anything.
Prager.
You should have him back on because he can tell you about what it's like to use Google Glass.
He's
he'll tell you in private, but
I think they try. Well, you know.
He
likes to.
So, Kevin, we should mention this. Kevin Rose, our good friend and co-founder of Revision 3 and Dig, is now a venture capitalist at Google Ventures.
No.
Was that the original plan, you think?
That was not the original plan from Google.
Yeah, it sounded like they put him in products.
But, I mean, he got what he wanted at the end because he somehow lucks out a lot. But, I mean, it's perfect for him because he really does have a good eye for stuff.
Oh, no, it's a great job.
And he's also, you know, and I'm
look what he's invested in. If you look at Kevin's primary investments, they're all huge.
His list is impressive. But it's great for him because, and this is not to knock him at all, but, you know, a lot of us are kind of ADD into things that we're really interested in. And this gives him the opportunity to get really excited about something, so excited that he's able to tell Google, the people who've put the LP, to tell them to give money to it. And then he'll go run off and look at something else. But then he'll get to come back and check on how they're doing and then go run off and look at other stuff. I mean, talk about a dream job for him. Holy crap.
So he was an angel investor in Fab, Path, Formspring, Gowalla. Okay, that's not so good. Simple Geo.
Oh, sold to Facebook.
Zynga. You've heard of them. Square, Foursquare. I think anything with the word square. I think he said
Zynga because it was NG, not NG Moco. Who's the ones that made the draw something?
Oh, no. He also has OMG Pop.
OMG Pop.
He also has OMG Pop and a little thing called Twitter. I would hire him if I had money to invest. I'd say, Kevin, here.
Yeah.
Here's money. Go.
Most of those are his. I think he also has a couple of – he put money into funds that other people – but maybe those are all his own personal ones.
This is according to Crunchbase, and you know they would never lie.
Crunchbase was down.
Crunchbase was down too?
Yeah, I was trying to look up information about some company. I'm like,
learn about the companies that are down.
I think it was cyber terrorism. I really do. I think it was cyber terrorism.
It sucked, is what it was.
How could Amazon Web Services be vulnerable to a single point of failure?
That doesn't sound right.
It just does not.
Well, you know what they say. When this thing happens, they say, it was a cascading failure. So we have one server in North Virginia, the small state of North Virginia, and there was a storm. A storm came through, and the server got wet. And then it all cascaded downhill from there, right? They all failed one after the other. That's what they say, right? It was a cascade. Right. Padre S.J., who's going to be the host of This Week in Enterprise Technology, he's a priest and an IT expert in our chat room.
That's impressive.
I know.
That's impressive.
We tried to pay him. He said, I just have to give it to the Vatican, so. He set up Skype for the Pope.
I wonder if he would like Penn Jillette's book.
I doubt it. Huh? We call him Friar Tech. Friar Tech.
What's he setting up next for the Pope? Pinterest or Instagram?
I want to put it on Pinterest.
Could he have the Pope and Rupert Murdoch argue about evil and good in Twitter, please?
That would be good. That would be good.
Rupert went after Scientology today, so it would be kind of a continuing theme here.
He says this was a failure by the clients, Netflix, to properly configure their systems.
Right.
So instead of them saying load balance throughout Amazon, they said, we like this one server in North Virginia, that small state north of South Virginia, and we'd like to use that, please. And then when it went down, they were all screwed.
Right. Yeah, because all the services came back at different points in time.
By the way, Euronerd is saying that the Pope is German. I forgot, Benedict. From now on, he will talk like this.
Like Jesus.
Yes. Hey, we're done. Yeah. We've covered all the topics and ad infinitum. I really want to thank Drew Olenoff for coming here from The Next Web. You're a West Coast editor, as I know now, because my entire Twitter stream has been spammed 800 times by apparently everybody else who works for The Next Web saying, check out Drew on Twitter.
We're a great team.
That Drew.
They're all happy about you being on there. That Drew on Twitter.
Some really smart people writing for The Next Web.
Yeah. Really good. Brett and everybody. They're all watching. Yeah. So, by the way... July 4th, Wednesday, it is in the U.S. Independence Day.
Mm-hmm.
But according to the Cosmic Log on MSNBC, it may also be the day the announcement goes out about the Higgs boson.
Is this using the particle accelerator in Europe?
This is our Independence from the Universe Day?
Yeah. This is the day.
The day we make piles of little mini black holes.
The Large Hadron Collider. Was really built, I think. One of the main things was to hunt for the Higgs boson. And it is believed they may have found conclusive data. We'll find out on the 4th of July.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Thank you, Drew, for being here. Thank you, David Prager. I'm excited about all the cool stuff you're going to do.
Thanks.
What's the best way to follow what you're up to?
My Twitter account at DL Prager, and then, quite frankly, if things go well with what I'm doing with Hippie Glenn, I'll basically have a little soapbox there every week. The show's called Toasted Donut.
What? Toasted nice. Donut?
Toasted Donut.
Nice. Not Pregnation?
No. Toasted Donut. No.
Because that would be a good name.
It would
just
be.
In case.
I could have called it Pragerpedia.
Or Impregnation.
So, yeah, that's Toasted Donut. It'll be on revision3.com/Toasted Donut.
Toasted Donut. That makes me hungry.
Well, it was the name is a little of a weird derivation. Glenn, one day, an indignation episode, said something about how if there's a stale donut sitting there, you just cut it in half, drop it in a toaster, and then it's a fresh donut again.
Totally. Yeah.
In a very hippie Glenn type of way to say something like that.
How hippie-ish is hippie Glenn? Hippie is something from Leo's in my era, not from Glenn's era.
He encompasses a lot of what a hippie from that era might have. And he's also, very into, environmental good and eating
well. He's reusing
well
donuts.
And, hippies in the 60s might have done, as well as a lot of people in San Francisco.
This really strikes me like a kind of a bizarro Ricky Gervais and company.
I can't wait.
That's going to be interesting.
Toasted Donut on Vision 3. Of course, you can catch Jeff Jarvis on This Week in Google every Wednesday. We won't do a show this week, I guess. We'll just take it off.
That's like, poor Steve on Security Now.
He did not want to take a day off.
His week was thrown open. What do you mean we're not doing a show? We always do a show. I'll do a show anytime.
You heard that. What do you mean? We've never missed a show. But it's Independence Day. No, but I want to do a show. So I'm not coming. I'm sorry. I'm not coming in. If he wants to do a show, he can do it by himself. I'm staying home. I'm not coming in. But we can catch Twig every Wednesday, normally 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. Lots of good stuff on that show with Gina and Jeff. And often some great guests talking about the latest in the cloud. It's not just Google. It's the cloud, Google, Facebook, all that stuff. Thank you for being here, Jeff. I really appreciate it. I'm glad you're feeling well.
Thank you. I share all my ailments and public parts here on Twitter and Twig.
That's because he's the Borg. Thank you all for being here. We do Twit every Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time, 2200 UTC. We have people from Australia who are here seeing it live for the first time because normally it's in the middle of the night or something, right? Yeah. Nice to have you from Sydney, from Canada. Happy Canada Day. All of our friends from Canada are here. Who else? Anybody? Anybody? Where are you from?
New Jersey.
New Jersey.
Hey, yo.
Hey, I got a pain. I got a pain in the left side of my stomach. South Jersey. What do you want me to do about that? So what?
Over here. Forget about it.
It's close enough to Philadelphia. Awesome.
What did she say when you said I have a pain in the left side of my stomach?
What do you want me to say about it? What do you want me to do about it?
Hey, what do you want me to do about it?
That's really funny.
What do you want me to do about it? If it were an appendix, it would be on the right side.
That's what Siri should sound like, actually.
Hey,
that
exactly
would be entertaining.
Don't you want Siri sound like Snooki?
They should have voice plugins have like Snooki they do for the navigation stuff.
Right? Yeah. I don't want Siri. I want Snooki.
Yeah, like you can have, like you were saying, with TomTom, you can have Yoda or Darth Vader talk to you.
That way, M. Lewis has given us a new bumper sticker for Virginia. North Virginia is for servers. I like it.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Virginia's for lovers, but North Virginia, that's for servers. Thank you all for being here. We'll see you next week. Another Twit is in the can. Yeah. Hey, we got applause. That's great. That's great. What a great crowd. Thank you all for being here. Really appreciate it. Impregnation. So let me just quickly, one more thing I'd like to mention. You see right here in our latest posts at twit.tv, we're rejiggering our live schedule. Now, this won't affect anybody who subscribes and downloads to shows. But for those of you watching live, Tech News Today is moving from 3 p.m. Pacific to 10 a.m. Pacific or 2 p.m. Eastern time earlier in the day. And a few other shows are going to move around as a result of it. We've got the schedule posted on our twit.tv site. And you could see what all the changes are. They're not all occurring this week. The big one is Home Theater Geeks moving up half an hour. TNT moving to 10 a.m. Frame rate, 3 p.m. Mondays. That's on Monday. So just, a word of warning to take a look at that if you do watch live. If you don't watch live, you won't notice anything at all. The shows will still show up at the same place at the same time. It's time for Twig this week.
No, it's not.
It's not.
We
you fooled me.
He's,
what is he doing here? Okay, start over.